Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of By the Numbers. I'm your host, Richard Lewis. My co-host is Duncan Thorin Shields, looking fresh. The beard is back. Mine's coming back. It's time to get raw, and let's talk about some Counter-Strike. Sam Davis, the producer, he's lurking in the background. We're laughing about some other shit. It's been an interesting week, hasn't it?
Yeah, lots going on. Roster mania never ends.
No, it just doesn't. And that's how we're going to structure the show, Duncan. We're going to finish off the roster mania we started, and then we're going to get into the beyond the summit stuff. But there's an interesting little bit of drama I want to get into as well. I love a bit of drama on this show. Do you want to do it now? Do you want to get the drama out of the way?
Yeah, sure. What is it?
Well, it involves your favorite team, Virtus Pro. Obviously, I know.
I think I heard about this. Yeah.
You didn't half hear about this. So, obviously, we know now that Virtus Pro, as reported by DK, accurately, of course, that Taz is going to be the guy that's going to make weight. They're bringing in Mishu, or Mihu, as apparently it's pronounced. And big changes in one of the oldest and most storied teams in Counter-Strike history. But, you know, we always thought, well, La Familia, Brotherhood, Simpatico, all of that would apply to this team. And certainly, even though Taz was being benched because his contract is so unbelievably long, he's going to probably still be tied to the Virtus Pro organization for some time. You probably thought, well, they're ending on good terms. And then somehow, and it's really weird, actually, I have no idea how this video kind of surfaxed. But there was a video of Snacks.
That's
and
a conversation
Taz.
In itself, isn't it?
Right, exactly. It's
convenient. Very... It comes out just now as well.
Yeah, I've got my own theories about it, honestly. But yeah, Snacks and Taz had this huge argument during a PCW, which of course is a practice clan war. I'm so glad that term's coming back.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah, it's way better than Scrim.
Yeah, Scrim is fucking lame. Fuck North American Counter-Strike. Obviously going to dominate 2018, but we'll get to that in a second. But anyway, so Snacks and Taz had this...
You want that fucking bets back on, mate?
Yeah, well... No,
amazingly, you thought it was over, didn't you?
Unfortunately for you, motherfucker, the window slammed shut, so now we've got to go. Okay. We've got to have a decider. We got one each. Okay. You got the FaZe Virtus Pro bet. I've got the Cloud9 bet, so now we need the decider for the ultimate forfeit. Anyway, we'll come to that. But look, it is the thread, Sam. You can bring this up, mate, because there's a translation that I'm told by... a Polish friend is reliably accurate. And what happened was they were playing this PCW and it just broke down. They just started fucking arguing. You know, they were playing on train. Taz says, oh, I'm pushing upper. And then they lose the round and Snacks just snaps. I've never seen, like, Snacks is quite like a passive guy, like a calm guy, very rarely loses his temper, but he went absolutely ham in this. And honestly, if you look at the evidence, he was quite unreasonable in what he was asserting, because Taz didn't make any, didn't make the mistakes that they were claiming he made, which was to push while he was blind. He actually wasn't blind. And Taz was sort of defending his position. Bialy as well was calling him Daddy Taz. In sort of a derogatory way, not a sexy way, obviously. And it was just really weird. And then, like, even Pasha was, like, sort of laying into Taz in this video, saying, it says here, experienced players should not be pushing with this spawn. Taz answers back saying, experienced rotating player would know and expect. Snacks, haha, laughing. You stood there, like, 10 seconds. You were in a corner. I was looking at radar. And then Taz is like, yeah. 20 seconds in the corner, curva, which is great, by the way. I love that word. And on it goes. And yeah, they had this sort of insane argument. And Cuban, the coach, had to come in and sort of diffuse the situation and say, oh, you know, Taz did make a mistake, but it wasn't as bad as what you guys were saying it was. And this is all recorded. Now, you can go watch the video. If you speak Polish, you're going to fucking love it. If you don't, you'll have to rely on the translation. But then there was more to this. Drama that sort of piled on, and basically what it looks like is everybody in the team has an issue with Taz. Like, Snacks came out and said, oh, we always fight like this. There's no way that's true. There's no way this is sort of a viable position, you know, for any team, a viable behavior and interaction for any team. So first of all, I know you saw the video, and I'm going to get into some of the reactions to the video afterwards, but I just want to get your first impressions on this. I thought it was an awful look, and I think it really explains where the divide in the team has been this past, like, year, and that is obviously there's people on the team that have an issue with Taz for whatever reason, be it his play style or his personality.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the reasons it makes it kind of prescient when last week I said that I've always thought that they were, in a way, they were kind of accurate when they described it as a family, but they never said we're all friends. They all just said, oh, we're brothers, we're family. Because, yeah, in families, you have mad fights like that, obviously, not least because the logic is when you know you're stuck with people, you're going to get even more pissed off with them, you know. Like, think about how the fucking, like, French scene works. They might never have a fucking argument. They just go behind each other's backs, like, shall we cut him? Yes, you are joining? And then they're like, you know, fucking Niak and that next guy just come in with the bloody fucking, like, the pink slip. There you go, son. You're off to the other team. Oh, what have I done, though? You'll never find out until one of us gives an interview in 2 months and just tells everyone, basically, what we'll never tell you in your face. Then they see you at the next event. Hello, how are you? See, this would all be Polish if I knew a fucking sick Polish accent. I'm having to go with the French analogy.
I'd stay away from the Polish accent if I was you, Duncan, honestly.
I think they have had fights like this in the past. Like, I could believe it. Definitely, obviously, it's not a normal thing. Otherwise, you couldn't operate a team like that. You couldn't, especially not that level of disrespect. You would never be able to operate, like, just in terms of team play, et cetera, and people wanting to work with each other. So I definitely think that was exaggerated, like, trying to make out, like, it's no big deal. It's obviously bullshit, but I definitely think that's happened over the years. And I know for a fact in 1.6, with their old lineup, admittedly, there was no Snacks and Bialy. That sort of shit used to happen regularly. I'm talking like every few months, because obviously they used to be a very up and down team in 1.6. They would win the big majors, but they go all over the place elsewhere. And there are tons of legendary stories of, like, literal fist fights, like, you know, someone leaving the team and then by the end of the weekend, they're still back on the team. And so, you know, that whole story that, like, oh, we never did roster moves. It's like, yeah, you went about as close as you could. And actually, this is one of those areas where I will call upon the card of, like, cultural differences. Because if you had anything close to this level of argument or an actual fist fight in, like, let's say the NA scene God forbid, like the Swedish scene, that'd be game over. Those players would never talk again. They would never play together again. The team would instantly fracture. Someone would be kicked or retire. In these teams, I'll give fair play. This is why you know it's a different culture. They could have all this shit go down and then a week later, a month later, it might all be fine again, and it was no issue, and they were winning again. So I will say you have to sort of take it with, like, a grain of context that won't be the same as if what would happen if you were in whatever our home countries, maybe whoever's listening, you know.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you on in that regard. But here's what I will say: that there seemed to be a very sort of different, like, tone to this, because I've seen the team argue before, I've seen them have those fights.
Well, I will say this, Rich. Here's one thing I think we do need to add is that if you look at, like you said, because everyone sort of had this tone against Taz, like, no one was even just criticizing him without sort of being rude. That does make me speculate that someone in the org was basically like, no roster moves. And they were like, but what about changing this player? And then, you know, that's what it sounds like. That sounds like your boss's story. I'm not firing this guy. So then you're going to be even more pissed off when that guy makes a mistake. Oh, but why are you bloody doing that? You know, because you can't get rid of him, right?
Yeah, and one of the things that, look, we've talked about it on the show before, is that there definitely is sort of a perception that because Taz has been the spokesperson for the team, does all the interviews, is always like the forward-facing guy of the organization. I don't want to call it jealousy because no one else on the team wants to do it. But because he's the guy that is always framing what is happening with the team, I think there's a little bit of irritation, frustration, whatever you want to call it, that it's always Taz who gets to sort of tell the story of what's going on. And I've seen this before in teams where the guy who's out there doing the interview, who is always well-liked, people are like always making threads saying, oh, how great is this guy? Because he knows how to handle himself as a media presence. Meanwhile, his teammates who aren't forward-facing are thinking, oh, I'm fucking sick of all the attention he gets. I didn't like what he said in that last interview, but I can't really do anything about it because I've deferred to him. And I know Taz has talked to me about this, that he says it's like, it's something like when we've joked on the show about being an attention seeker, he's come to me the next time and gone, trust me, I wish somebody else on the team would do it, but it has to be me. There's no one else who can really do what I do for the team. So in his mind, he's in a bit of a prison. You know, he's got to be the guy that does it. And it's like there's a little bit of resentment built up over the years that it's always him who's got to do it.
Well, I mean, here's an interesting detail. Sadly, we never got to see this play out. But if you remember, go back and look, everyone. At DreamHack Masters Las Vegas was the event where fucking Snacks did an interview with Smix. And that was one of those ones where he was like, you know, that's where everyone was making all those references to like Papa's London School or whatever the fuck. So at that point in time when Snacks has done it, like I know Bialy, I don't think has ever done an interview, but I've talked to him. He absolutely can speak English. He actually has pretty decent English.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
So I actually think that Snacks doing it, because I know Pasha had already done a bunch. Obviously Neo's done some. That actually tells me that some of them were maybe even trying to like even up that difference and be like, hey, we can do the interviews now. The reason why I bring that up though is because obviously like from that moment onwards was when they had the mega slump, so you never got to see him do interviews or be in a big final again, so we never got to see how that would have played out, because obviously if they'd have totally replaced him in that sense again, that's another reason to be in the team removed.
And honestly, it's something they're gonna have to get on top of, right? You're gonna need that media presence. You're gonna need somebody that can do the in-between game interviews, knows what to say, knows how to diffuse any potential situations that are building up. And maybe they don't have that right now. But here's what's super interesting, and you'll appreciate this because obviously you're a historian. You go back all the way to 1.6 with these guys, you know, as I do. You go back even further. But Sam, if you can just play this video in the background with closed captions on and no sound.
All right.
This was Luke. Now, you remember Luke, one of the Golden Five. Yes. And Luke is out there. He's streaming and was, you know, playing PUBG, a popular game you might have heard of, and basically he said some stuff which kind of like it was a bit of a wild throwback to some of the old beef that he seemed to have, because when the original Golden Five did fall apart, it wasn't on good terms. If anybody thought they just pensioned off the Golden Five players when they brought in Pasha initially, because that was Pasha replaced Luke. That's not how it went down at all. It was very acrimonious, actually. But if you just play it in the background, you'll see some crazy shit. Luke says, and I'll just read you from the closed captions here. He gets asked, what do you think about the Taz move? Luke immediately goes in and says, he is trash, and we are happy that this team put him out and threw him into a leaky pond or something. No, a leaky boat that will sink soon. We're so happy and we cheer for Virtus Pro. We want them to win the next tournament. All tournaments, finally, they get rid of Taz. He was a mental load on the team. And this day, a lot of people, about 100, wrote to me. Everyone was happy Taz was out. These are people who know him. This isn't fans, so it wasn't hate for hate's sake. And they said, did you hear about it? And I said, yes, it's a good day. I think the team's minds will get better a lot, because this, for me, was the most important issue. I can't believe I was with Taz for 10 years. And then he goes, from the other perspective, it can look like hate, but we are the people who know him, and all people from this environment say the same thing. I'm not hating Pasha. Even Pasha replaced me. There was no hate to him or anyone else on the team. It's interesting that people who don't know Taz are saying, don't forget what he built. Don't forget what he created. He presents himself as the parent of this team, but it isn't like this. And I can say this, it is not envy. So he gives, you can watch that video. He gives a very long fucking diatribe about how Taz has been a problem in the team. No one in the Polish scene particularly likes him. He's been a problem to the team and their mentality for a long, long time. And everyone in Poland is fucking celebrating him being cut from the team. Now, I will say, you've got to take what Luke says with a pinch of salt. He's not a reliable narrator in the traditional sense, right? Like, Luke obviously still has beef with Taz going back to whenever the fuck it was when he was, you know, officially removed from the team, and maybe a little bit after that. But that, to me, is such a fucking savage indictment. And if that really is a temperature check on what people think about Taz, it's no wonder Taz himself posted on Facebook that he wouldn't be back to Virtus Pro. Might not even be back to any Polish team, honestly.
Yeah, the problem with that is I have to immediately like tag on to the part about Luke not being a reliable narrator there. Because here's the big problem with that story, is that in the majority of the stories from the 1.6 team, which involved outrageous behavior, violence, argumentative behavior, he was the primary catalyst. He was the one that was doing all this shit, fist fights, being fucking rude to people, you know, like that. So and in most stories, it was basically, I'll just straight up say, it was him and Lord were the two people who were the worst ones, basically. And obviously, he was the one they kicked first. out of the official lineup, etc. Then there's the story that, yeah, on an early episode of podcast that we did, so in early CSGO, so it had been sometime in like the first half of 2013, we had Taz on the show and we asked him something about Luke, because here's the thing, okay, famously, their problems with organizations began after Meet Your Makers, which was a really big org that had all this VC money. And what happened was, when they were with that team, one of their last big results was they finished second at the IEM, what's now known as the IEM World Championship, was the IEM Global Finals at the time. And second place was worth somewhat good, like 25K or 30K or something. And what happened was, when they left the org, they had an even bigger problem getting the prize money, because now it wasn't even about harassing ESL, which is what they did for many years, because back then ESL used to be at least a year behind on some of this prize money for especially IEM events. So initially, they spent all their time harassing ESL, like, where's the money? And in fact, when Luke got kicked out of the team at the end of that year, they basically sort of made it his little project, like, right, well, you're not playing for any team right now, so why don't you be the guy who sort of follows us up, since, you know, it's everyone's money. And what happened was, eventually, one of them asked ESL something like, so where is this money? You know, it's been 2 years now. And then they were like, well, what do you mean? We paid MIM. And then they were like, what? MIM, at the time, you know, MIM had like reformed this one, but it doesn't exist in that sense. And when they ran it down, this is Taz's words, not mine, I've not verified this whatsoever. Taz claims that basically Luke had managed to get the money. He'd gotten the 25K and he just kept it all for himself. And that there's this ridiculous story where one day Taz is like in his room or something and he hears this sound outside his room, like, so he just goes to the window and he looks out. And he just sees that Luke guy on a brand new motorbike, just looking up like, and then he just fucking, like a movie, just doesn't say anything, just drives off like, right down the street. And that's the last, like, you know, that's the head of the cunt. So just going to say, that's the, again, I have to point out Taz's words. I don't know if this is entirely true, but that is the person that is being alleged to have said all these things. With all that said, like, I do think there's probably something to it. Like, I'm sure there were some hard feelings, and maybe, like, I always got the sense that this is another factor that's an old school concept a lot of people won't appreciate in the modern day, because it doesn't really exist in CSGO now. But another detail in the old days of 1.6 was, if you were the captain, and especially if you were the captain who did the media obligations, because we're talking about before there was media obligations, as in it will build your profile. We're talking about it's an obligation. Someone has to do the interview. Someone has to be the public spokesperson and do all the stuff you need. Otherwise, you know, the sponsors don't like it. So if you were the guy who did that, you nearly always, because you took responsibility, got to also be the guy who sort of ran the team. Like, you decide who stays in the team, you decide who gets kicked out, and you are the hardest person to remove. Listen, just go ask Get Right and Forest how hard it is to remove Karn from Fnatic. They were the best players in the world, and they thought to themselves, it's a slam dunk, we'll just go tell Sam Matthews, the Fnatic owner, listen, you know, Forest, Karn's time's come and gone, we're the best players, now let's just replace him. And no joke, the Sam Matthews guy basically just said, no, I'm going to leave you guys and let you guys go to my main rival and just keep this guy who's the captain. So it was like, I would go ahead and guess it was like that with Taz for most of the period and most of the teams he's been in, including Virtus Pro. Everyone remembers this famous story where apparently the Virtus Pro guys wanted to have Guardian in that new lineup that they made. And then instead, Taz was basically like, no, like, trust me, we're going to go with this Polish lineup. I know it might seem like it's not going to be as good, but, you know, the stories are all Taz. It's not, there's no one else there. It wasn't. And then Neo said, and then, oh, Pasha thought, what about this? They're not even in the fucking story. You get the sense some of this stuff's one-on-one. That's why I wasn't surprised when they gave Taz that Mercedes and no one else anything, because they probably had a special relationship with Taz that the others didn't, you know?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because, you know, I talked about that at the time. I thought it was such a really strange thing to do. Like, oh, if you get us to the final of a major, I'll buy you a Mercedes, not the team a Mercedes each, which they probably still could afford. It would be a strange motivator.
Well, it was if they won DreamHack Vegas, wasn't it?
Yeah, my bad. So if you win DreamHack Vegas. So again, that has been, for me, a catalyst, to use your word, that's been, you know, bubbling up under the surface and creating resentment for a while. Clearly, Taz was not only the outward-facing member of the organization, but was also a personal favorite of the management. Yes. You can't just give one player a fucking Mercedes for winning a tournament when it is a group effort to win a tournament.
Oh, and by the way, this is an example of where I know already what some fans are going to think, because some fans are going to put two and two together and be like, wait a minute, that's when they were already making the $25,000 a month. Why would you care if someone got a car? Right, if you think that, Just stop. You're thinking that because you don't have $25,000, right? Imagine you already have a contract that says you have 25K, right? That money's already accounted for. You're not every month thinking, fucking hell, wow, I'm getting 25K. You go, that's already your wage. You now in your brain have reset to that being the baseline. And you're now entitled to that money. So now anything else given, that's a new scenario. You'll never think, wow, I still got 25K. No, you already had that. I'll give you a great story that illustrates how this works. So when the Lakers had Kobe and Shaq, and they were both getting paid millions of dollars a year. They were the star players in the league. They were already world champions. Famously, when Kobe got that rape accusation where he was charged with it and he was going to have to go to court, the Lakers, to be nice to him, let him use like a private jet that they had. And what he did was he literally just came back and complained that they hadn't given him the biggest of their private jets. You can see now the sort of mentality. So same story here. Don't imagine that these players were just like, ah, it's cool that he got a Mercedes and, you know, we've got the 25K. If I'm Snacks, I'm like, but I was the MVP of the tournament. You know, what I mean?
Like, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, it's like, oh, yeah, you're the MVP. You don't get a car. He's the in-game leader, which just happens to be the case for this tournament.
You were gonna do it, surely do it privately, you know. I didn't, that's what was so publicly. It was almost like you were sort of saying, fuck everyone else. He did it all.
Yeah. It was honestly such a bizarre move.
He actually just said to the others, like, you know, if you guys send me an email, I'll send you a Mercedes as well. But what happened is Pasha used his Gmail address or so, and it got caught.
Yeah, I would have got you all. That's straight fire. So look, one final question, then we'll get into Rostermania. There was a very Caesar-esque kind of like image here in my mind. It's like everybody sort of lined up to stick the knife in Taz at his lowest ebb, which generally, it's generally what happens in esports as well. When you're on top and you're doing all these bad things, no one ever calls you out because they're scared of you leveraging your fan base, or they're scared of the hammer coming down on you, or maybe no one's going to back you up and support you. The minute somebody is down, everybody lines up to kick the corpse and goes, ha ha, I was part of deposing the tyrant. No, you fucking weren't. You were hiding in a fucking sewer for 20 fucking years while this cunt ran amok. And that's esports in a nutshell. I've seen it a million times. You know, when a big developer who's been doing, like, it's like Riot Games employees. They all leave Riot. You get them one-on-one and you say, yeah, Riot was pulling some fucking game though and some crazy shit. And they all go, oh yeah, I had nothing to do with that. I actually tried to speak out against it internally. Never met a Riot employee who was responsible for any of Riot's bullshit. Makes you wonder who the fuck's actually enforcing it, doesn't it? Yeah. Same with every guy in esports. Whenever there's a scandal or an organization that doesn't pay money and one player like risks the shame and the impact and the humiliation, maybe even the legal action of going public. And then they deal with the brunt for a week and then 50 other people come out going, yeah, that team owner's been a piece of shit for years. And you're like, well, this should have probably come out a little bit sooner. So I just thought it was like very pathetic. Like I said, pathetic is the right word. Like, just let Taz go gracefully. You know, you guys have won. You keep the org. You keep the salary. Exactly, you've got the player you supposedly want. Everyone's of a mindset that, oh, it's going to be a much better move for the team. Me, who's the future? I don't understand why all this shit needs to come out in public about, you know, how Taz was like some sort of supervillain behind the scenes. I just think it's like really distasteful. And keep in mind, none of it is sort of measured by any real metric. It's just personality clashes at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. Here's what's telling about what Luke said. Okay, it's his perspective. Maybe he's trying to tell the truth. How come he can tell us he is trash? This is such a good thing and all these, but no details. Mm. Not a single reason why he is trash.
Yeah.
Apparently just the fact that he dared to say he used the father of the team. Is that it? Does that make you trash? Have we reached that level of hyperbole where that's like makes you a terrible person?
Yeah. Must be. So anyway, thought that was interesting. We'll finish off Rostermania because there's a couple of moves that we definitely need to talk about. So first of all, I think this is the first time we absolutely got fucking wrecked on the podcast with the Danish move. We actually got wrecked because you were like thinking it was going to be some NWO shit with Config, you know, and Astralis and all that. And it didn't pan out that way. And it was pretty much announced almost as soon as we said, thanks for watching, buy the numbers. And then boom, and we just got immediately fucking wrecked.
Have you noticed, by the way, someone made this point, and I think there's I'm starting to think there's something to it. You know how many fucking announcements happen the day after we do this show?
Oh, it's wild, isn't it?
It's mental, isn't it? Like, I don't think some of this is a coincidence. Some of them are, but you know what? It's starting to get a bit too convenient. Like, you know, especially massive, like, potential drama bombs just drop, like, right afterwards.
Yeah, we need to change it up. We need to, like, just roll a dice every week and do a show on a random day. I think that's the future. So basically what happened was we were expecting, because it did look incredibly transparent on paper. Kierby going to fucking North, North benching Config, Astralis going, oh my me, bloody hell, I don't know what's going on. And turns out, actually, there is now a much bigger question about this whole player-owned organization and how involved the players are in all of these roster decisions. Because what happened was we saw Optic basically implode while we were live on the show. Mixwell left Optic, and we thought, oh, that's going to be a move to sort of shore up the overall firepower and consistency in the Optic lineup. No, it fucking wasn't. It was the complete disintegration of the Optic lineup, which we'll talk about in a moment. Part of that disintegration was Magic's boy leaving Optic, and then from fucking nowhere, Astralis signed him, not Config like we all expected. So I was like scratching my head on this one because, first of all, I definitely think Astralis missed a trick. If they were in the market if they were in the market for fucking a Danish superstar, and look, no disrespect to Magic, I think he's going to do a fucking job, but it's apples and fucking oranges. Like, if you don't get Config in that situation, I would have thought Astralis had the money, the means, the connections. You know, North and Astralis, sure, obviously two organizations that know each other.
Well, someone dropped an interesting detail that I had not thought of, but makes a lot of sense. Mm. So do you know who just left North's organization and joined Optic?
Yeah, right.
That Milk.
Oh, right. Interesting.
So think about it. He was in there with North, new Config, knew all the boys, goes to Optic. Not only that, think about it from North's perspective. You aren't part of Refresh. You are a direct competitor with Astralis. Do you want to give your best player to Astralis, or do you want to say, oh, why don't we send him to this safe NA team who's moving to NA, by the way, and who probably aren't going to be like world contenders like we are, and just have him go over there and also probably get the same money from Optic, who has loads of fucking money. So it's actually a slam dunk. I mean, it's the same thing that they often do in sports. Oftentimes, I'll trade you, but I'm not trading you to someone within my conference or something like that, you know, or my direct rival or whatever. That makes a lot of sense when you think about that. I didn't actually know that at the time I made my video. Someone made a good point, I thought.
Yeah, well, it's like the end of fucking Any Given Sunday when Al Pacino says, I'm off to a Mexico expansion team and I'm taking Willie Beeman with me. There you go. That's a fucking straight fire reference. So I was blown away by this. Honestly, like, I definitely think Astralis have missed a trick, but maybe we're focusing too much on the negative and not the positive here. I mean, first of all, the question is Magic's boy an upgrade to Kierby?
Okay.
And I've got to be honest, while he might not have had the opportunity to show that in the Optic lineup he was in, I honestly think overall his skill ceiling might be a little bit higher. I always think of Magic's when he was in SK Gaming was this indomitable presence, where Kierby's always had consistency issues quite famously. So I guess if you look at the trade solely on its merits, maybe not in current form, but overall, with the right coaching, the right development, putting Magic in the right positions, I think this could raise the level of Astralis a little bit. Although, sure, nowhere near as much as I would have expected it if Config had joined.
Yeah, well, especially when you consider, like, listen, Astralis gave that lineup a really long run, over 1 year. And they saw, you know what, we're just not going to be the guys who, like, we're not going to be the number one team, basically. But you know what, we're in punching distance still. You know, we can still potentially get there. So the only two people, realistically, you could even have thought of cutting were Kierby and Dupree. And then Dupree, obviously, the last 3 months completely fucking turned it around and was actually looking like one of the best players. So Kierby was logically the one you had to remove anyway. Obviously, the problem here is you did massively fuck up by not getting Config. That should have been planned the whole way. I also think that the worst part of this entire story isn't even having to get Magus, isn't even having a player. It's the idea that, like, you didn't plan to make a roster move, but you knew someone's contract was ending. You didn't have it re-signed, and you knew the roster lock was days away, right? You know what? if it was a player-owned dog, I could have forgiven that. Since it's not, whoever runs Astralis, that's got to be one of the fuck-ups of all time. What were you doing? Do you know how to run an org?
Well, I mean, again, here's another question. Then.
Like, put it this way, if they hadn't been able to get one of these players, would they have literally just had to, would they be the ones signing some unknown, like, Gade or fucking, you know, just having to get anyone they could before the roster? It could have gone even worse.
Yeah, it definitely could have gone worse. I mean, here's the thing. There's another way of looking at this. Because I brought it up at the time. I thought it was interesting. Config felt the need to go public and go, oh, I'm not toxic, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he does seem to have a reputation among Danish players as being a bit of, you know, perhaps not the best teammate. Now, sure. I don't know if that reputation is established or not. Honestly, I'm like of a Hiko mindset myself. I think, like, it doesn't matter if a player is fucking difficult as long as he gets it done. I don't have to fucking, share a bed with a guy like Bert and fucking Ernie. Plus, I just want to turn up and win games.
There's way too many fuckers in the Danish scene who are top players, who have fucking confidence issues, who break under pressure. Yeah. You know what? I don't think you guys are the best judge of who someone who actually has a bit of fucking hunts plays, you know, like, I think you might need a couple of those guys. My key with those kinds of guys is always all about balance. As long as you've got the right personalities to balance out, it works.
Yeah, again, and fucking Config is no doubt, like, just a fucking baller player, full of confidence, never seems to get fucking tilted. Sure, he's had bad games, but, you know, never seems to get choke, I should say, rather. And I've seen him be like a fucking presence in the team. Everyone's seen that famous clip of like him at E-League when he goes for the knife to clutch around when it's like a really needlessly risky play that if someone turns around and just one taps him, they lose the round, possibly the fucking whole game because of it. And him and Cajun are just like, you know what I mean? Like giving death stares to each other. But like, I'm like you, I think Config's like definitely not toxic in that sense, but it just makes me wonder if his fellow Danes know something we don't, and maybe there was an actual sort of vote, if you like, hey, maybe we can go and get Config, and Astralis were like, no, we don't want to play with him, because, you know, sometimes players are their own worst enemies like that.
Oh, for sure.
It's like,
yeah,
it's like, do you want to play with this fucking amazing god tier player who might have a bit of a big personality and might dominate conversation and might be a little bit difficult or eccentric in how he presents himself, and those players will go nah every time. Meanwhile, you'll see absolute dog shit players that are like struggling, and then players will come out and go, he's the perfect teammate, he drops clocks for me, he throws all the smokes for us. It's like, yeah, but can he
win? Support up and out,
yeah, but can he win a fucking game for you? And it's like, well, no, he can't actually. You're like, is there ever any chance if you play bad he can carry you? Well, nah, not at all. Definitely can't do that, but he's a great guy to hang out with. Well, I don't give a fuck about that. You know, I'm of the winner's mindset. If you want to all be buddy buddy, I understand that as well. Sometimes chemistry can make up for insufficiencies in other areas, you know. But for me, I want to just play with a bunch of winners. I'd want to play with four fucking simples, even though that, you know, team might be an absolute train wreck when it came to what was happening off the server. So, I think there's something possibly gone on there. I don't know though. You know, it's a big miss.
Here's the thing that I find depressing, though, is that what's mental about this move is that I actually think if you look at it, like, here's the thing. I also agree with you. I actually think that Magisk is probably a slight upgrade. I also think if you think of how they'll probably swap the roles around and put Dupree back to being like the main entry, I think it even might work, you know? But I don't think it's not like a significant upgrade. So they're still going to have to figure out something else to become number one. Like, this doesn't do it alone. And then if you add in like North's moves, their moves were a little bit more of a gamble, but maybe have some good potential. This Danish shuffle was a bit shit. It was just like a sideways shuffle for everyone, you know, like, who won this shuffle? No one.
Yeah.
I guess. Congrats to Melk. You win.
Yeah. Melk definitely won the shuffle. I mean, I suppose on the surface, you know, yeah, maybe. Yeah, you're right. Nobody did. All it did is sort of further disperse the Danish talent, of which we know there is a combination of five Danish players that can be the best player in the world.
Sure.
And much like when we were saying that about France in 2015, for whatever reason, we'll never get that five. We never got that five with Sweden. We never got that five with France. We certainly haven't got that five yet with Denmark, although maybe for a brief period of time it was true of Astralis, although I think even Astralis, that was the best team in the world, you could have upgraded parts of that, you know, and it still would have been as good, if not better. So, yeah, it's a weird shuffle that happened. I guess we can talk about the Optic move. Came out of fucking nowhere. One of the weirdest teams
Yeah.
I think I've ever seen put together in Counter-Strike. I don't even know how these players would sort of know each other to bring this together. It's so bizarre. So I guess let's start by talking about the Optic lineup that imploded. I didn't think they were doing anything particularly bad, honestly. And I thought when Mixwell went out, I thought, okay, they're just going to get an upgrade. They're going to get one of these players that are going around in Rostermania and keep the core. They completely cut everyone on the team and went to a Danish core three, which obviously would mean that they're in the European qualifiers and everything, as per usual. You know, they want to keep it European. But I didn't think the Optic team with Alu and HS and Freiburg and those guys, I don't think they necessarily did anything to warrant such a sort of almost like ruthless cutting, you know. I thought this is like, this says to me that Optic are ready to fucking take CS a lot more seriously than they had been, and that they want trophies, or certainly at least to be at majors, you know.
I definitely don't think he had to cut all five players. Like, there were pieces in that team you could have kept. Like okay, assuming Magus doesn't get the offer and, like, say, literally, you know, I definitely want to go to Astralis for obvious reasons, I would literally have kept Alu and Magus. They're pretty good players. You know, I think they've shown enough to show that in different teams that they could be good. I certainly would have considered cutting some of the others. Like, in terms of Mixwell, I have to say, just because from watching his level in that team and then watching him in the Optic that was like the bad one that Stanislaw left, and then the Optic that was the good one, he'd gotten progressively worse. Like, he's a good player, but it looked to me like that team, essentially, it didn't activate any of his strengths. Like, if you ever watch him as a player, he's one of those players who you could literally believe played with like a wall hack. Like, he's got really good sense for where the enemy is, like really good timing, doesn't even have to see people to throw flashes. And yet, in this team, that didn't seem to help him at all. Like, he never seemed to be on the same page with them. The comms seemed like they were just a fucking train wreck. I think his role was reduced, and he's clearly an all-round talent. So if someone like that can't kind of find a position in your team that works, that tells me there's something fundamentally wrong with the team. Then you've got to add in, I don't know what Freiburg did as in-game leader. They didn't seem like a well-led team. He was terrible as a player, so I'd have definitely booted him. HS, I mean, I've stuck with the same position because it hasn't changed really for me. Is that,
yeah,
I just think that he was like, it's almost like if you get promoted too early and you haven't quite sort of like paid your dues, because part of paying your dues isn't just the respect thing. It's that, you know, you've got to go through a bit of turmoil first. You've got to go through some troubles, or you've got to kind of show something extra in your skill set before we put you on the top team. And I felt like they boosted him up, and then I don't know how they used him in the team, but he didn't really do anything in the team. So I could see a world where you'd have kept a couple. That in itself, though, is what suggests to me that maybe something internally was terrible. The fact that they just said, wipe the entire slate clean, don't even keep anyone, and just start over completely.
Yeah, and like, I'm a Pet did say, I mean, this was interesting, that they wanted to get Dennis and Rabino over, okay, Shazam and Stan initially, I think it was. But they just missed out. There was other deals going through. Apparently, I mean, the one thing I can say about Rostermania is it's a very good time for players to get over their market value. I mean, like, my understanding is it was a salary issue that Dennis and Rabino knew they could get higher salaries if they went to the respective teams that they went to, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Here's what's bullshit though, Rich.
Yeah.
Like, this is an area of, okay, here's what's bizarre about this. Before the major, I made this point on a past episode, before the major, I heard all these wild roster moves from top teams that, by the way, the interesting thing about them was all of them had like massive upside. Like, I could see why players, even if I don't necessarily agree with the move, I can see why they'd go for it. Like, you know, you're going to get a superstar player, or you're going to get a different in-game leader that you'd prefer, or you're going to swap out this one teammate for someone who you've played with in the past. All moves that made sense. First of all, except for the Kierby one, almost none of them happened. And so what's bizarre is I actually thought that the scene was in a mad position where everyone had figured out how these contracts and roster locks work, and everyone's just waiting, right, plan in advance. Then when you get the window, you make your move, cool, I'm in, I'm out. It's the opposite. Every fucking idiot team just like waited until there was 2 days left. And as you're saying, just had literally beggars could not be choosers, and had to just take whoever was available. And then you've got all these sideways moves.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, first of all, since this hasn't been a particularly spicy episode yet, I'm going to sprinkle some spice on it and get some fucking, you know, get some hate coming my way. You'll appreciate this. So I saw a twit longer from HS. And if you remember, Yeah, the classic tweet longer, right? Well, you remember, of course, he did tweet out saying, I just want to play as much Counter-Strike as possible. Obviously, while the team was imploding, dropped out some qualifiers, dropped out some events. At that point, I knew something was up. I knew big changes were coming, and my assumption was it was going to be HS getting cut from the team. And then he said, he put this new tweet longer out after it was announced on the 11th, and he said, after the unfortunate happenings within our Optic lineup, I am left with a feeling of frustration because it all could have gone so differently. But at the same time, I don't really feel negative about all of this. It was for the betterment of everyone else as well as myself. There were just too many problems with that roster as a whole and also with each individual, which was not visible to anyone on the outside. I learned a lot as a teammate and met some good people in the Optic organization. You'll notice he doesn't say Optic team. People like them will always find success, and they're a great influence for everyone around them. I will for sure be more confident as a player, and I will be a solid, reliable teammate and person in whichever path my career takes me on in the future. I will never stop chasing perfection. Well, here you go, mate. A little dicky bird told me that one of the issues when this team first started having issues was Optic wanted to get fucking locked in and have a boot camp. And while they were doing that, HS rocked up with his girlfriend. So there you go. I mean, this might be gossip. It might not be true. I have it on reliable authority. And apparently he was like not locked into the fucking mindset of let's boot camp hard and do this shit. And that put all of his teammates on fucking massive tilt because you got this young guy, you know, they're all older pros that want to take it super serious. And he's like, right, should we get down to this boot camp then?
So, wait, you know, guys, this is the saddest thing about esports, right? It's that. Remember, this is HS's first big team. His last team was fucking Penta. Now, I know they did all right. They qualified for the major. But Penta is never going to be a massive org. It's never going to be... like, there's no one joining Penta. Like, it was my boyhood dream to join... you know, no. No one gives a fuck. So you're not famous. You don't get paid loads of money. So the second he gets into Optic... remember, the context of him coming to Optic, as I've said, is he's sort of the guy that got last second when a bunch of other people turned down the offer. So he's already, you know, you need to prove yourself. You need to win over your teammates. Nah. Boot camp happens. This cunt comes in, leather jacket, shades on. All right, bitch. Yeah.
But no, so here's the thing. I you can't verify that personally myself. Like, I wasn't there.
It does sound like it happened, though.
Yeah. A lot of players told me about this. And apparently it was very frustrating for the organization. And they were like, everyone was super triggered by it, and that was when the ball started rolling on, you know, because keep in mind, HS was also playing very poorly at this point within the team, and, you know, we were talking on the podcast about, will he ever get up to that level? Will he ever be able to do it? You know, can he adapt? Now, his play got a lot better towards the end of this Optic lineup's existence. He was one of the better players on the team, honestly, but I think that the overall issue with... where this started, that he wasn't focused during this crucial boot camp in the team's inception, just tilted everyone else off the face of the earth and didn't want people to play with him. So I find it very interesting that he's the guy coming out and going, oh, I'm super frustrated by my teammates and I'm going to be a good teammate and I'm going to strive for perfection. Well, how about this? Next time there's a boot camp, fucker, get your head in the game. How about that? There's a good fucking start for perfection. I mean, immediately, I'll tell you, as a guy who's run teams before, like, there's certain rules, like, about boot camps, which is meant to be an intense period of training to overall raise your level. If you turn up and you're fucking half in, I'll probably just drop you from the fucking team. Like, fuck that noise. There is a tacit understanding of what a boot camp is, and that is that you are going to come here, work fucking hard, and we need to do this. It's a drill to get you from where you are here to here in a very short period of time. It's like, you know, if you were a fucking boxer and you were like, right, well, I've got that big fight in 6 weeks, got to start cutting that weight and getting my fucking, you know, getting up to speed for what I'm going to do in the ring. All right, darling, just watch me, you know, and you're just doing something. It was like how I knew Audley Harrison was never going to make it. Audley Harrison used to tell his own coaches, I'm done for the day, mate. I'm too tired now. I can't go on. Like, imagine that. Imagine that. You're telling the guy who's meant to push you past a certain point to get you to fucking ring ready. You're telling him, now, fuck off. I'm done for the day. So I hate that attitude. And again, that part I'll definitely stand by. HS exuded that in his time in Optic. That isn't even a secret. So the girlfriend story might be a juicy little tidbit added onto it. Could be complete lies that someone's fed me just to make me say it publicly, in which case I'll feel like a bit of a cunt. And I'm sure HS will deny it. But I'm pretty sure the people who told me wouldn't make that up. So I don't know. Something to think about if HS goes anywhere. So that's the optic line. Let's talk about the former optic line. Let's talk about this new one. Config, super happy with that. Gade, won't lie, I think he's looked pretty good overall. Seems to have, like, really good fucking nice crisp aim, a prospect that's coming through. Cajun B will be rifling Duncan, as we said on the podcast. He should certainly get back to. Happy about that. And then they brought in Shazam and Stan with the ultimate. I don't even know how many times. It's some sort of insane triple heel turn. The guy who originally broke the NA Optic roster comes back to Optic. Like, it is a mad wrestling storyline. So I think we can all agree, and I'm a pet didn't hide it, this wasn't the original five that they wanted, but Stan and Shazam both have ties to the Optic organization, both have been in the Optic organization before, both were in free agency.
And both were in that fucking officer and gentleman status of they had nowhere else to go. That's maybe the most key element, right?
Yeah. Well, look, this for me is a key time for Shazam. Cajun B is stepping aside to give him the AWP. So, you know, Shazam, for me, every time he's got into a big team in the past when he's been in a purple patch of form, he's fucking choked a little bit. Like, yeah, he did it at Cloud 9. Stop it.
That's why he's so popular, isn't he?
Yeah, you're right. And then
right, keep going, yeah.
In Misfits, he was playing like unbelievably well in a smaller team. So this is an opportunity for Shazam show. He's put those demons to bed, and he's actually capable of playing at the same level he is with better players around him. And Stan, I don't know sort of what happened to Stan, honestly, form-wise. So, there's question marks around those two for me. Gade is obviously an unknown quantity. Cajun B going back to rifling. There's like so much that can go wrong with a team, but also so much that can go right.
Yeah, I much prefer this composition to the one they had before. Like, there's a lot more aspects to it that logically make a lot of sense, like in terms of where people are going to fit in their roles. Like, fair play if they weren't intending to originally get Shazam, because that was the weird move to me. That's the one that didn't make any sense, really. It's like, why is he in the lineup, though? Like, why not? I mean, there's plenty of other people in the NSC. I think you could have given a chance to. I mean, I'd have thought about someone like JDM instead. I mean, he's available, apparently. You know, that's another one you might think of. So I don't really get the Shazam one. So basically, in this team, Shazam and Gade are the real like X factors to me. I'm not really sure how they're going to fit in or work. With that said, they both have their own upside in a way. I agree with you. I've always said, I definitely think Shazam gets overrated when he has the odd really good game. But
yeah.
He is someone where he's always been held back by his reputation, not his actual ability level. And so as a result, he hasn't had that many chances in big teams, really, if you go and look at it. And generally, he's had to grind his way up against a fair player. He does keep playing. He does keep trying to do that. In terms of the Stanislaw one, that is a weird one. I have to say, I still haven't. I get the feeling the Stanislaw scenario of what happened to him after he left Optic and even why he left Optic is one of those ones that we'll never get to the bottom of, probably because it has like 50 factors, you know, it's not just one thing. And from getting to know him a little bit when he was in Team Liquid, I do get the sense that he's one of those in-game leaders where the only way he can succeed as an in-game leader is if everyone buys into what he's doing. If they don't, he is not a charismatic guy at all. In fact, I would actually say that seems like a flaw of his personality as a leader. He seems like one of those guys who's like quite serious and doesn't really seem to have sort of a jovial side to him or charisma in the way of like sort of winning you over and an attractive force to you in that sense, you know. So for guys like that, it tends to be you're either the brains of the operation or people just don't give a fuck. And in fact, that'll be repulsive to people, the fact that you're not really like super charismatic. So it doesn't necessarily surprise me that he didn't really like get picked up after, like, you know, there was no chance Cloud9 was getting him or anyone else. So it doesn't really surprise me that he sort of languished after that. I don't mind it as a pickup. I think he's always been a decent enough fragging player. Like, these are players, actually, if you look at all of them, where, except for Config, who kind of is, I mean, he shouldn't even really be in this team, quite frankly. Everyone else is in a position where, yeah, this is probably the sort of team they should be on, and they're all looking for a second chance. So I think that's probably the ideal setup. They're either an up-and-coming player or a player looking to reinvent themselves. So that's probably a pretty good sort of toolkit to give to Stanislaw and see if he can do something with it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I know, like, Stan's confidence has been super low. Like, he basically played his cards when he was on top. Like, and he thought, this is it now. This is all going to work out. And immediately it went from being a dream with that sort of first run that Liquid had, which, if you remember, they had their best run when he was in the team, when he actually had one of the statistically worst performances of any pro in any tournament ever. Yeah, absolutely appalling. And then he just got cut instantly from the team amid rumors of him clashing with the coach, Zeus. So it's just been a downward spiral for him ever since. And you've got to say that.
I mean, you look at his fucking career. It is an example of, like, you know, he's the guy who fucking went right every time he should have gone left. I mean, look at it. So former teammates winning majors, former team winning a massive tournament, beating SK Gaming, beating the major winners. Literally everyone, basically, except him. Him and Mixwell, basically, they're the ones that got fucked.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see how it works out for him. And like I say, Stan in particular is somebody, you know, he needs to bounce back soon, because you can only have that downslope for so long before it becomes, like, you know, almost impossible to get back to where you were before. So look, another couple of roster stories, and then we'll get into what happened at the summit. So got to say, I'm incredibly disappointed with what happened to Rubino. You know, I've been a massive fan of Rubino for ages. Like, Rubino for me was one of the best players available in free agency. He could have gone to almost any team that was looking for players.
Mate, almost every team we've mentioned at the moment and will mention in this Rostermania. Yeah. I'm amazed that he isn't in them. Like, I think he would have been pretty good in practically all of them.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, it's not like it's some obscure memory you have to, like, dig out of your mind. When he stood in for Astralis, he was unfucking real. How good he is. It was like he hadn't been gone at all. And I've said it, this is a player who can do it all. He makes every team he goes to improve. He's the glue that holds shit
together.
He's got
a sick attitude as well, by the way. He's one of those guys where he is, on one hand, like a self-confident person, but not in any way an arsehole. He actually seems like a wicked teammate. It's the sort of person you'd want to play with.
Yeah, he definitely is. Like I say, honestly. So when he was announced in free agency, I was like, right, well, someone's going to get a fucking steal here. Maybe even an NA team. They're going to get an upgrade like they've never seen before. Because for me, Rubino, his style of play, his approach to the game, as you say, his attitude, there isn't really an NA pro that sort of has that package, right? So I was like, he's going to do well for himself. And he joins Heroic. And it's like, it's such an underwhelming move in my mind. Like, if I was Rubino's agent, I'd be like, yeah, you should probably fire me, mate. Because the world was his fucking oyster here.
No, put it this way. Think about this, right? I was thinking the other day, I mean, I've made this point before, but it got more extreme because of this Danish shuffle not involving Heroic. Heroic is so shit out of luck as an org. It's unreal. Because first of all, logically, they are the first team, along with Godsent, that must be sold by Refresh. There's not even any questions to which team they're keeping, is there? Like, there never was. Not only that, once you're sold, is anyone going to want to join your team? If you don't have as much money and you just have this budget lineup, then think of all the players you didn't get. It's basically every single person who went from a Danish team in the last year and a half. Didn't get Magisk the first time. Didn't get Magisk the second time. Didn't get Config. Didn't get Cajun B. Didn't get fucking anyone. Didn't get any of the players coming up. Didn't get Mertz. Didn't get Gade. Didn't get literally anyone. You got Ange when he was a throwaway from fucking NRG in NA. And now, miraculously, you've got Rubino. I don't even know how, quite frankly. So I actually think that's why it's just depressing. Because, like, what help's he ever going to get in the future? Probably none.
Yeah, well, the interesting part is it was actually sort of that good attitude and that sort of big picture awareness that brought him to Heroic. I think there's a lot of good things in the Heroic lineup. You know, I like Yugi and Snappy. I think he seems like to have his head screwed on correctly. They're still getting good mileage out of Moddy. So it's like there's definitely things in the Heroic roster that are good. And, you know, they've surprised us in those best of one scenarios in the past. But you go ask a Vega Squadron fan if that really means anything. And you could definitely do something with this team, like, no doubt about it. But here's the thing. He turned down going to Optic, Rubino. So he was like, it's a bit of a project, and maybe they want to make me move to NA, and, you know, maybe that team won't work out. And he felt that the players in Heroic were personalities that he could work with better, and that overall the quality would be better than that Optic team. I'm not too sure about that, honestly. I don't know. I think if Optic, if all the parts click, and obviously you would have had to have factored in Rubino being on that team, I think that would have been way better than this heroic lineup. So very, very bizarre for me that he chose to do it. And of course, let's not forget this. Heroic has got fucking Peacemaker as a coach, which is like the fucking kiss of fucking death for almost any team out there. So I don't know, man. I just hope for Rubino's sake this move works out and Heroic get good new buyers and they you know, they get to fucking play at a level I hope they can for him, because he doesn't deserve to be on some fucking second string European team with a fucking coach who doesn't know what he's doing, you know?
Well, this is the downside of players like him, and I've seen this happen before as well, which is because he is such a reasonable person and it can do all these different things, that sort of player, because they're sort of unselfish and willing to sacrifice, sometimes do that with their career. So now, like, you saw what he did with Dignitas. What a motherfucking waste of time every one of those lineups were. Oh, let's give all these old washed-up players a chance. Didn't work, mate. Oh, let's give all these young players a chance because they're from my country. Also didn't work. Oh, bloody hell, what's going on? Oh, now I'll just join a team that are all really great guys and they've all promised me they want to work and get to the top. Fucking hell, do you know? You are aware this is a video game where you shoot people in the head, and how good you are at shooting people in the head is a massive factor as to whether you win the championship. You know, there's no fucking like trust falls and like rope climbs involved in this scenario, is there? Like, at the end of the day, FaZe could all be the biggest shower of cunts ever, but if they just bang everyone's head off with an AK, we still give them the trophy. We don't go, yeah, but how many i5s did you give? Like, no one gives a fuck, do they?
It's so dumb. Like, but you know, I think to try and look on the positive here, like Rubino, he's a smart guy. So I think he must have seen something here. Maybe he's already played with these guys behind closed doors or whatever. And like, there's definitely talent on that roster. Like, Esetag was the right guy to cut. It's a huge upgrade in just one for one. And Heroic were knocking on that door. They were there or thereabout. They had that upset potential. So now this is a time for them to maybe solidify and move forward. I definitely got question marks about them, but you know, fuck it. I'll monitor that one with interest for Rubino's sake and not fucking stick the knife in just yet. So speaking about sort of people, you know, the ghost of fucking Christmas past, people who were washed up and fucking haven't been around for a while, Jacob comes in for fucking Renegades from no one. That's Jacob, not Jenkum, as some people like to call him. He's been fucking so bad. He's like that, don't he? He's been bad for a while. And honestly, one of the most disappointing talents to develop in World Counter-Strike. What people have to remember is when he came out and broke into the scene in that G2 lineup, and they had that miracle run to the semifinals at Collusion of Poker, he was the guy that was like the like world talent that had just emerged from nowhere. Everybody was saying this is good. Well, you know, if they made it to the final, maybe MVP for the whole tournament, had like just god tier presence in the team, incredible statistical numbers, a really aggressive, awesome play style that you like to watch, where he just literally will take every duel and, you know, 9 times out of 10 seems to be winning them. Unfortunately for him, after that, he just had a huge drop off. Now, there's been a lot of speculation in the scene as to why that is. Personal problems. Some people say he disappeared down the fucking skins rabbit hole, like some pros seem to do. You know, whatever fucking happened to him, it's a tragedy, because the guy from 2015 to where he is now at the start of 2018 is unrecognizable as the same player. Now, coming in for Renegades, he's got it right. He's filling Naf's boots, and we all know what happened there. And then second of all, this is last chance saloon. He's been in fucking, you know, free agency or benched for so fucking long that if he doesn't shine in this Renegades lineup, no one's going to come calling ever again.
Yeah. I mean, the sad thing is, I think it was in my Makaleli reflections that he actually told an interesting story about Jacob, which did kind of shine some light on why he like went to shit in that G2 lineup. Because basically, if you remember the team they had some players who had decent names at the time. Obviously, they actually had Dennis in that lineup, the guy who's now just joined NiP. They had McAleely himself, obviously. They had, this was after Scream had gone, because obviously that's who Jacob replaced. They had Rain, who was like actually already a pretty decent name, and then they had Fox, who was like the support orper. Now, McAleely said something like, when they recruited Jacob, the concept actually was that he was going to be like a support player, basically, but that for some bizarre reason at this major, he was just fragging everyone's head off. And so after that, he got the logic in his mind that I'm a star player. And even they thought, well, maybe he is. Like, I mean, that's outrageous that someone would do that. So as a result, if you looked at any of the lineups after that, because if you remember, unfortunately, that was his big breakout, but Dennis left right after. Dennis immediately went to Fnatic and they got in AZ. And this was where they had one of those lineups where it's like there's no in-game leader in the team. Like, what you do? I mean, Rain apparently was doing it at one point in time, but there wasn't like a logical in-game leader. And so what you found was all the talents, basically, except for Rain, just all degraded and all like just went to shit and had no team player. And apparently, what the Jacob guy, because he was still trying to play like super aggressive and like he was that's part of the reason he went to shit. Because I remember he was the guy where I remember there was one tournament where I think he literally had one game where he got like 4 kills and then the next game got like 30. And that was, and by the way, the 30s weren't as often as you'd have hoped for. So that's the sort of like, I mean, how would you even fragmented identity he had as a player? And he obviously just never, like, this is one of the things that's very tough. We can draw this back to the HS example. One of the other reasons why I don't always want to pick up young talents who it's only the talent. It's not that they've already got something like about their game that's together, you know, like Sonny has. It's more like they just show flashes of being good, but they're not good consistently. And then they've only played like one role and in one team and maybe a team where they were one of the better players. The problem with people like that is they themselves don't know who the fuck they are as a player or how they should be played. So you either hope that they go through some hard times and figure it out. And that's why you then hear about them a year later, because they made it through tough times like Kenny S, like Naf have done. Or you hope they get, you get them to a good in-game leader fast. You get them to a Carrigan, whoever it might be, pick any of them that are good in-game leaders. And you hope that these guys look at them and go, right, I've diagnosed you. You're going to be this sort of player. This is what it's going to do. You know, maybe even I start you out of this role. And if you show some promise, I'll move you. That's how you can progress. It's the reason why in almost every sport you've ever seen, there's very few all-time great players who aren't touched by a great coach at some point in their careers.
Yeah, totally. No, the reality is that one of the great tragedies in Counter-Strike, you know, just to be serious, you know, for a moment, is that there's so much young talent that comes through that doesn't find that mentor, doesn't receive that help, that guidance. And they very quickly can find themselves, you know, in several potential pitfalls, and there's never anybody around. You know, people don't understand this. Your owners, your managers, they usually defer to the players. Like, who do you want to play with? Tell me what players to get. Players pick who players play with. I think that's a almost system that's doomed to failure. Certainly get input, but ultimately, I think somebody peripheral to the players, somebody external to the players, has to have a vision of what kind of team they want. Then you've got the coaches. Now, we know most of these coaches are glorified water carriers or, you know, at best, analysts. They're not coaches in the sense that they're going to sit you down, help you get over a psychological issue, help you with, like, you know, an approach in the game, help you make an adjustment in the heat of the moment. They're usually not those kind of guys. You either get the water carrier who can give you a motivational speech, which you've heard 20 times, because that is it. That is their card that they can play. Or a guy who's like, well, I've been watching demos all night, guy. So, like, you know, and it's like, okay, there isn't anybody that sort of does both, right? And then on top of that, in terms of just older players and how they mentor younger players, you rarely see that anymore. I mean, one of the great things, like, about, for example, you know, a guy like, say, for example, Sean Gares, or, you know, famously, there's been other in-game leaders in the past. I mean, for good or ill, Dazed used to try and do this as well. They would put the arm around you and they would tell you, it's not just about what you do on the server. This is what you need to do off the server. This is like the training you need to do. This is how you need to improve. You've got to listen to me, and I'm going to take an invested interest in you developing your potential. Now, unfortunately, people who do that and take that level of interest are few and far between. And I've seen so many many young players come through and they get themselves into the same old cyclical issues that we see time and time again. I mean, the first hurdle you have to overcome as a young player is don't sign some shitty organization that is just going to ream you the fuck out and toss you aside and not pay you any of your fucking money. That's point number one. Nobody's helping you reading contracts or any with you know any of that shit. So I always made a point to do it. Then on top of that, you've got to get to the next stage. You're in a team. Now, let's say you're the talented one. How do you marshal the frustration? How do you communicate? People have got to understand, we're talking about people who play video games professionally for a living. The idea that at 18, somebody who's invested the time you need is going to be a well-rounded individual capable of doing conflict resolution and accurately communicating their thoughts in a balanced manner is absurd. And if you think that about...
just logistically implausible.
Yeah. Yeah, implausible, right? And you know, look, if you've ever coached youngsters in real sports, you see the same shit. They're not out there interacting with people and learning social skills and skill sets. They're out there kicking a ball, throwing a rugby ball. They're out there learning BJJ. That's what they're doing, and they dedicate so much of their time to it. It comes at a cost. So when a lot of people go, ah, why are all these people so fucking autistic or whatever other derogatory term they want to fucking throw at people, you have to understand life is balanced. There are payoffs. If you want to exceed in one area, generally it comes at the detriment to another. Nobody seems to accept that premise, and you hear it all the time. Well, he's difficult, isn't he? Yeah, but is he straight fucking fire? Like, where were the people when Simple was pretty much pissing his... If Simple hadn't have been as good as Simple is, there is no Simple today. This is a guy that argued with everyone in the team, including old stalwarts and veterans of the team, like Markelov and guys like that. You're getting into it with fucking kingmakers. Right, and then on top of that, you're actively, outwardly saying, all my teammates suck compared to me. And nobody said, yeah, but look, you couldn't do it this way, you can do it this way, you can frame it this way, and this is better to have internally. Then he's out there straight frauding skins off people. Like, he could have been gone, cut from the scene many times over, and he's had to develop himself as a human being, which has worked incredibly, pretty much by himself. And that's why I always hate the people that want to stick the fucking knife into Simple and say, oh, but, you know, he might be a great player, but he goes to teams and he makes them worse. He's, as a person, these past 3 years, 4 years, whatever you want to say, to get to where he is and be the person he is today and the player he is, doing it all by himself, it's a fucking miracle. It doesn't happen in any sport. So I definitely think there is a long-term problem we have when it comes to developing talent, giving people... Organizations in 2014 were saying, oh, we'll give you media training. We'll make you savvy. We'll teach you. Does any org actually fucking do that? No, they still don't in 2018 when blood-stained venture capital money is raining from the sky. I still won't send you to a fucking seminar. So, you know, I'll send you a bullying seminar for a fucking stupid video that goes viral, but I won't send you to a media training seminar so you know not how to fucking hamstring your own career on Twitter or when you're streaming. So people don't invest in these youngsters and young talent in the way they should, in my opinion.
That's also to tie in, because this is going to be a very relevant story when we obviously talk about the Nip move. This is another reason why I'm pissed off at these top teams who the team holds onto the old washed up players way too long. And then the washed up players refuse to just leave gracefully. Because if these players logically went just one step down the competitive ladder, they could change the whole future of Counter-Strike in their country.
Yeah.
You could have all these like, the whole point is none of those fucking guys in the Polish scene have ever played with a Taz or a Neo. Nobody in the rest of the Swedish scene has played, I guess some of them have played with Pronax, fair play. But generally, they haven't played with someone like Exist or Freiburg, you know. Like, first of all, these guys instantly could contribute something. They could be veteran players who can play a role and can say, hey, I can do the basics of this fundamental aspect, and now you're a young star player, you go and do your thing, and we've got an half decent team there. Instead, what's bizarre is you get these top orgs hold on to the talent way too long, and as a result, basically sabotage their own chance to win anymore. And then what's bizarre is because there are no veterans at tier two and tier three. And listen, in the past, I get it, it's because there was no money. So if you got kicked from the top team, time to retire, no point sticking around. Now you can get a proper salary. If these guys had all moved on gracefully over the last few years, All the bottom teams wouldn't just be like, let's get five young aimers and see which of the two of them turn out to be good. Like, those teams aren't teams. Like, Epsilon had all these players we've since seen go on the other squads. As a team, they weren't good. You know, like they were never going to fucking win a tournament. They had no potential to do anything crazy. So that's one of those aspects that I just find really disappointing, is that you don't ever get those veterans go down. Because in every other sport, you can find out, right? Here's what's very interesting. Anytime a team wins a championship, right, in NFL, NHL, NBA, there's always the story, right, where some guy got his ring, but, you know, he's like 18 years in the league, or, you know, he's like his prime's literally 12 years before. And usually you look at his numbers, right, and you go, this fucking cunt doesn't deserve a ring. Look at him. He played 6 minutes a game and he got, you know, the most tawdry dog shit stats ever. And you think to yourself, that doesn't really count, mate. And yeah, it doesn't. You didn't win it like if you're a star player. But so many times that guy played some pivotal mentorship role in some like 20-year-old star's career, where he taught that guy, don't go out to the club on a Thursday if you've got a game on a Friday. Or, you know what? When you play the game, I can see you're having problems fitting in the system. So here's what you do, right? You listen to the coach at this point in time, because then that's going to open it up where you can sort of not listen to him later and get your points in this. You know, gives them all the little savvy details. And yeah, as a player himself, he's probably not going to do anything, but his impact could be massive.
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's like I say, you only have to look at what happened with like guys like Rops, for example. That's just another prime example of how like the scene does fucking cannibalize its own. Like if you just leave it alone in isolation, Rops comes through, you know, he's killing everyone in FPL. Which pro player said, wow, Rops is like a really good talent. Like somebody should get on this guy. No, all the pros said, he's a cheating retard.
Yep.
And fuck him. He should be kicked out of FPL. The players were actively swarming to kick this prospect out of the way you would have prospects emerge. Surely when you play things like FPL, you've got to fucking say, there are going to be young players we've never heard of banging our fucking heads off. And you should be like, that's a good thing. I'm not saying don't be cynical, but I'm saying, or skeptical rather. But when you're cynical to that degree, and you're like, any talent that beats me is obviously cheating. Well, I think you're in a fucking shit place mentally. And unfortunately, it's a mentality that many pros embody. Like, nobody held out when Rops came through. Nobody held out a helping hand until he went to this, which is unprecedented, went to the Faceit offices to play under the watchful gaze of Bardolph and DDK, right? To prove he's not cheating. Or, you know, imagine that. Imagine how often this has happened in esports, where a player has to go to a completely different country, play on a completely new setup, being supervised and observed to prove their legitimacy. It's absolutely fucking insane. And then what happened then? Well, he wasn't.
It's the idea Bardolph's like a qualified judge to tell if anyone's cheating. He's cheating. He's definitely cheating. What do you mean? But James, we set up the PC. It's fine. What keyboard is that? Tell me what it is. Can I buy it off you?
He's killed him in less than 9 hits. He's cheating. Right. So, you know, you do that. And then what did people react when he proved he wasn't cheating? You think, OK, well, apologies and humble pie all round. The only person that did was JW, because JW is fucking straight fire as a human being. The rest of them all pretended it never happened, and then started criticizing him, going, oh, if he's so good, why doesn't he join a real team then? And he was like, no, but I want to finish school. My parents don't believe I can make money off this. Did anyone like say, oh, I'll talk to your parents if you want, and like they can see how I'm living as a pro player, and I'll fucking explain to them that, yes, this is a good opportunity for you. No, nobody did that. Nobody did that. Nobody helped him out. It's a fucking disgrace the way we treat young talent coming through, man. Like, just honestly, it blows my fucking mind. And players are culpable. That's the worst part.
So I've got a good story for you on this. I did an interview.
Oh, sorry, my bad. MBK actually did. I remember that. Yeah, thank you, chap, for correcting me. Because MBK, again, model fucking pro, great human being, right?
So I actually did an interview the other day with Automatic that'll be coming out next day or two, I think, in which it's not like a reflections, but it's like a halfway between a reflections and like, here's an interview about today, basically. Because obviously I wanted to get some of his backstory, because it's not really that well known. And I basically asked him, like, you know, I knew a lot of his teammates over the years when he was in all those teams where he was just a journeyman and he was never a star player and never even looked like he was going to be. No, and had zero hype around him, by the way. As in, even his teammates would all tell me, nah, he's not going to do anything. He's just an average player, that guy. All right. Some of them even told me mad shit, like, he's just not a very cerebral player. You know, the thing about him is, he's not going to cut it, you know. He's just always going to be sort of a support player. And when they were telling me, I asked him, you know, like, does this line up with your experience? And he basically told me, like, oh, yeah, when I was in these teams, you know, some of the veteran players would sort of tell me, like, you know, we're going to take all the star roles and you're going to do this. And anytime he did a mistake, they'd all sort of be like, you're shit. And that was the guy's career. Until what happened? How did he get a breakthrough? Stewie 2K, who'd already basically gotten out the ghetto, turned round and put one motherfucking hand down and lifted another brother out.
Yeah. I mean, it's mad, isn't it, how often it fucking happens? And it does make you wonder. The problem you've always got is that when organizations try to develop talent, they always do it holistically. Like, they're always like, well, we'll take an all new lineup with no experience and give them no guidance, no help, and just see if, you know, something grows. Like, well, doesn't work like that, does it? We've seen, like, you know, think about that Epsilon Swedish team that had, like, good young players that went on to play in other teams. All been underwhelming, I'd probably say, since then, compared to what they were doing on that Epsilon lineup. But again, nobody fucking helped them. You can't just throw, like, it literally is throwing shit at a wall, and some of it'll stick. But that isn't shit. That's fucking real people with real talent, real potential, and you're treating it like it's just some fucking disposable resource. So, you know, it's finite. If you get a player like Stewie 2K, you got to fucking nurture it. If you get a player like Automatic, some journeyman in the scene, fucking six teams in 2015, nobody wanted him, and he gets that opportunity to play alongside a friend, experienced players, veterans like nothing, and develop, you can see where it can go. You just got to be smart with how you do it. It's all about the fucking blend and balance, you know, and I don't think enough organizations, it's not that they don't know that, it's just that they don't care enough, and it's fucked up. Anyway, we need to pick up the pace if we're going to talk about the summit and the rest of Rostermania. So here's one that'll blow your motherfucking mind. Fitch cut for after one bad tournament, which, of course, was the worst tournament to have a bad tournament. It was the major, after all. But, you know, the guy who exploded onto the scene had that amazing DreamHack Winter, if I remember rightly. Malmo. They've all blurred into one for me. Winter is no longer discernible from any of the tours, you know. so Seas joins Gambit full time, and Fitch is out on the transfer list after one like bad tournament. I got to be honest, I don't know how I fucking feel about this. If it was 2015 Seas, it's a good move. If it's the Seas that exists today, which it is. This is bad business.
Here's all that needs to be said, mate. Here's all that needs to be said. Right. You remember when I made a video in which I put forward a number of solutions to the problem of the miners? One was dissolve the CIS miner, make it part of the European miner. One was keep the CIS miner, add a South American miner, add a Nordic miner, which was taken by some cretins in the Russian scene and translated into Thorin says all of CIS is shit and shouldn't be allowed to have a miner because none of them are any good. Absolutely not what I ever said in any way.
What you were thinking?
In this scenario, right? To this day, I am now apparently, even though, again, this isn't even one I've attempted to craft myself, I'm apparently some antagonist of the CIS scene now, right? And every time they win a game, any team who isn't Na'Vi, Gambit, or Flipside, I get all these messages. Oh, look at this. Oh, they've won a game. I'll tell you who doesn't motherfucking believe in the CIS scene. Everyone in Na'Vi and Gambit, you daft little cunts. Why are you picking up Seized when you just had a major where a team of nobody's made it to the round of eight and even said, haha, we don't even make money. Then you've got all the players who play in Vegas Squadron who've just beaten FaZe, who've done a few things. None of those players going to come in? Nah, let's get Seized, who literally has gone from team to team doing absolutely nothing, literally living off his name from the past. He's got nothing else at this point in time. So at this point in time, that's like Gambit saying we don't give a fuck about anyone else in the entire CIS scene.
But exactly. You're telling me you ain't got the spending power to go out and get, like, fucking Buster or a Chopper, a Mir. There's fucking gold in them there hills. I mean, honestly, it's going to be like, you made a good point the other day when you were talking about how French players and South American players should brush up their English skills. If these Russians could speak fluent fucking English, I'm telling you the opportunities that they would have. Because individually, whatever you want to say about the teams, individually you can identify the talent that exists, but their own teams won't give them a leg up. Their own team, like if you're like a Buster, for example, you can only dream of one day playing for, you know, the likes of a Na'Vi, a Gambit, right? Playing alongside those god tier players from your region, you know, playing with the likes of Doja. Who wouldn't want that, mate, right? And meanwhile, they're all like, now we're going to take this fucking cunt who has literally been washed up for fucking 2 years. It's not even a debate now at this point. Like, Seized is absolutely terrible. You know, I had to make a video trying to explain to people because they thought he'd thrown a game because they lost to Stiffmeister and Seized was terrible, jumping all over the place. Well, The excuse that he gave for that was that he and Flamey gave for that was that he'd been awake for 30 hours prior to these online games. Great professional teammate there, by the way. It might only be online Counter-Strike, but you got to win your online to get to your offline. You know, that's generally how it works. And keep in mind, he was still technically trialing for the team at that moment. That's, again, that's another fucking hammer down from owner Richard Lewis. What, you've just been awake for 30 hours and you play absolute dog shit against UK?
Here's a contract.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
please sign.
Brilliant.
Please.
I love it. You're so wacky. But I had to explain in a fucking video, this is just what Seized is now. This is what it is. You know? Mind-blowing. And look, Fitch, you know, Dust Moretz in the chat, as he often is, regular watcher of the show, and he said, you know, look, Fitch did have more than one bad tournament. You're being a bit disingenuous. I think the major was rock bottom. It was a level of terrible performance he hadn't experienced before. I think that's fair comment. But yeah, all right, maybe.
I think rock bottom's getting replaced by fucking Seized.
Seized, yeah, I think you're right. You know, there's still potential there, but certainly if you're going to cut Fitch, roll the fucking dice again. Roll the dice again. Please. Like, just... You got to. You gotta go for a fucking gamble here. Seized is, I don't know, unless they've got some fucking stem cells lurking around to pump into him so we can get back to who he was. It's not going to fucking happen, unfortunately.
Well, that's all you need to know. That's the fucking iniquity, is that you did get replaced by Seized. That's like that fucking episode where, what's his name, Principal Skinner's talking to that Superintendent Chalmers. Yeah, because it goes so badly at that inspection, he goes, I'm going to promote, I can't remember his name, fucking so-and-so. And he goes, but he's a drunk. And he goes, and a pill popper, and he'll be taking your position. You know, like that's the fucking iniquity of getting Seized in instead. It's like, are you a breathing human? Yes, you're in. Sound.
It's then so again, bad.
That is sort of the dossier level at this point in time. Isn't it? Still alive? Yep, you're in.
I don't know where Fitch goes either. Like, that's it now, I think. Like, he came close to having a fucking actual CS career, but now it's back to CIS obscurity. I think that's so fucked up, you know, when we were praising him for like 2 months. And now it's just like, well, it's over. Hope you like that. It's like you're going to become a fucking pub quiz answer question. That's your life now. Whatever. Anyway, let's talk about the big announcement today. Finally happened after all the cock teasing. Dennis does indeed join NIP, like we revealed.
I think 4 years late.
yeah, you're right. No, and you made this point in your video you put out today. Dennis was the one who got away for NIP. Another one of those weird personality, you know, clashes, maybe issues stopped him from joining that team. People couldn't get along. Definitely, you got to look back and look at it as a missed opportunity. But maybe for both of them, because obviously Dennis would have a fucking incredible trophy room right now. He would have won a lot more tournaments than he has right now. And I definitely felt that Dennis could have been a player that would have added something to NIP. He's proven that over his past career. But finally, we see Exist step down, which is always the way they frame it in NIP, that these long-tenured players step down. There's nothing voluntary about that, by the way. No one is actually stepping down. Stepping down is like, you know what, Dennis? You are way better than me in every fucking department. So I'm going to step down and mitt way for you. Absolutely not. These people, you literally have to fucking get out. Just get out. Right. That's the NIP core. And we obviously know Get Right and Forest are never going anywhere, but so this is the end now. This gives NIP a flexible approach to roster solutions forever now, because obviously if Dennis doesn't work out for whatever reason, you can realistically cut these players now. They're not the god tier players, the major winning players. You know, they're not the 87-0 players. None of that history applies. So NIP are in a much better position just for Exist stepping down, purely for that reason, if no other. You know, it gives them a flexibility. But this is an upgrade. It's so fucking insane. I'm pretty pleased, actually. This is if you're a NIP fan right now, you should be doing fucking cartwheels that you've got this guy.
No, I mean, here's the thing as well. Dennis himself has crafted a pretty interesting and unique career. Like, I was looking this up the other day. I think he's been in the semis of majors with three different teams, because he did it with the LGB team, he did it with the G2 team, which later became FaZe, and they did it with the Fnatic team. So he's in different lineups. I mean, I know the Fnatic and LGB share some players, but You know, this is different eras of Counter-Strike. And what's mad is when I was watching some games before I made my video to just have a look at what style he was playing or how he was fitting into the Astralis team when he was a stand-in, how he was playing at the end in Fnatic, I actually think he's one of the rare examples I've ever seen in Counter-Strike of someone where I watched it and actually his numbers aren't as good as they should be. Like, normally what happens is you look at someone's numbers and like, oh, they're pretty good. And you're watching the game and you're like, this player just works really well in this team. You know, he's getting a lot of easy kills. Or, oh, look, this guy, just for example, plays an off angle with an aggressive player and he just racks up kills off him, you know. When you watch Dennis play, he has some of the best spray I have ever seen in CSGO. It's outrageous how good it is. But he does have a super aggressive playing style, which I think, unfortunately, will mean that you'll never have the best numbers because you just get killed way too often. So he's the guy who, if he kills two people, he's 100% dying. So he's always going to be sort of like averaging it out like that. So I actually think, yeah, there's a lot of potential with him. Plus, what I like about this move is, I heard some weird comments about this move because some people were like, yeah, but what about the in-game leader position? It's like, have we been watching a different Nip for the last 4 years? Like, was exist because some tier one in-game leader? Like, as you said, Dennis literally does everything exist can do, but better, more consistently for many more years. And even if he doesn't want to do it, it's almost certain when you look at this lineup, he's not going to be calling fucking in-depth tactics. It's going to be the most bare bones of tactics and playing off the individual talent. So I don't really see what the downside is. It just seems this is one of the few moves out of all the ones we talked about, which is like all upside for the team that got him.
Yeah, and honestly, I think it's going to give everyone a lift. I think towards the end of Exist's tenure in NIP, there was a little bit of a weight there. You know what it's like when you play on teams and somebody is playing poorly and is and can't get out of the slump, and you're friends with them, you play with them for years, but you kind of know in the back of your mind they're fucking done. They're never getting out of this. So I have to put our relationship to the forefront to sort of justify playing with this player. And I think that's the position that they all got to. Like, Forrest, again, another model fucking pro, and Get Right, you know, they obviously had a lot of time for Exist, played with him for many years, go all the way back, know him from 1.6. But I think they probably knew. Like,
by the way, you know what? This is a rare exit. Because we wreck CEOs and fucking GMs so much, because they are just so full of fucking shit. It's like, close the fucking lid when you're done. That's what I want to do with their mouth when they're finished with their PR statements. But you know what? Fair play to that guy who's like the I can't remember if it's CEO or the GM or whatever of NIP. Because remember, he said last year sometime, like, you know, we are thinking about roster moves. Fair play. He's done all the roster moves. They've actually happened. And the people they've brought in have been good pickups. Like, this really is a new fucking era for NIP.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. Like, honestly, I think if Draken and Rez needs to hit that consistent level of form, but if that happens, you know, I think they can get some deep tournament runs in 2018. Last roster move to talk about, and it segues into talking about the summit. I'll try and wrap that up in a nice, neat little bow. Obviously, NAF going to Liquid we didn't talk about, and in particular, Nitro moving to AWP. Now, I'm not going to lie. Had we talked about it last week, had we had the time, I would have said, don't know how I feel about this move. Don't know how Nitro's going to do as an AWP. He just came into form as a rifler. Seems very counterintuitive. And I know Nitro says he wants to AWP, but players say crazy shit all the time, don't they? Yeah, I'm going to be the entry fragger now, but you can't do it. I can't entry frag, but you can. You're the best aimer.
I'll tell you who Nitro is. Nitro is that fucking kid, right? Where if you just meet his family, you'd think fucking all these parents are harsh because you know the kid's like, "Mommy, can I get a scooter?" And they're like, "No, you've already had something for Christmas." And you're like, "Fucking wow, they don't have a good family." What you don't know is that kid already has a fucking closet that's got a fucking dead hamster in it, that's got a fucking recorder, that's got a guitar that's never been played, that's got rollerblades and doesn't ever go to the, you know, he's that fucking kid. Every 3 months he wants to do something different and he's changed it up. Like, remember, he was the reason when he went to in-game leader, while they had this amazing spark in form and it was looking sick, then it went downhill, bam, I'm straight off being in-game leader again. So it's like, unfortunately, it worked out great at this tournament, but I'm already not buying that. I'm just like, how many times am I gonna get tricked?
So look, they went to CS Summit, and I guess kind of we'll jump into the spoiler. Turns out all of these moves, as counterintuitive or insane as they looked on paper, actually fucking worked. NAF was fucking god tier, MVP for the tournament, really fucking stepped it up in the final against Cloud9. And on top of that, Nitro's open really caught me off guard with how fucking good it was. I definitely had question marks about it, but for once it seems this is a very intuitive, you know, he's in tune with his own talents, his own ability, because he was so good at the fucking major rifling, like, you know, was their best player there. He even overshadowed like Elige and guys like this and Twists. Now, all of a sudden, like, 2018 is shaping up to be the fucking year of NA Counter-Strike, by the way. And I don't often toot my own horn. I do remember at Columbus saying, like, people asked, you know, what is this as good as the NA teams we've got? Because you had CLG and Liquid, obviously, you know, going gangbusters at that tournament. And I was like, well, no, they'll never win a tournament. But I could see if this crop of youngsters comes through and some of the old guard are willing to step down, share that knowledge, like what we were talking about. I said, maybe in 2018, they can win an international tournament. And that was like, boo, boo. I got this, you know, fuck that, he hates NA. Well, turns out, somehow I actually knew what the fuck I was talking about, because all of those things have happened. And suddenly, especially thanks to the breakup of Optic, you have got two teams right now that are international class, a major winner, and they are gonna, like, this tournament proves that Liquid, this new lineup, would steal now that it's got a bit of practice under their belt. NAF coming in were fucking, you know, the extra firepower. Nitro on the up. This is proof, actually, that Liquid are ready to fucking rumble. The cutting of JDM was particularly ruthless on the surface. It wasn't that he was doing anything bad. It was just that he wasn't carrying games by the scruff of the neck. He was just being a very functional AWPer, you know? And certainly, if you look at like guys like Sixer, who led that mad charmed life where they were absolutely terrible, you know, JDM got cut a lot quicker, in my opinion, for a run of what wasn't terrible form. It was just ordinary, average, this is what an AWPer should do form. So Liquid are fucking ready, and man, they proved it here. This was a fucking great run by Liquid to the final, and a dominant performance over Cloud9, who, let's not forget, had a map advantage in a best of five.
Yeah, the thing that I think that I think has been proven over the last year and a half is, for some reason, pro players and analysts, basically everyone except me, I have to say, was so locked into this mindset that you have to have a primary AWPer if you're going to be a top 10 team. They would say it every time, oh, so you can't play Mirage without primary AWPer, blah, blah, you know, all this stuff. And yet what's bizarre is you saw numerous teams that had like a decent AWPer, and that nearly always ended up being one of the mad limiting factors to the team, is that, first of all, their AWPer gets eaten fucking alive by the truly great AWPers. They just feast on those guys. So now your guy's limited as fuck. Secondly, you're in a world where, like, the force buy is going nowhere, so your AWPer's now also getting wrecked by people with half buys, etc., and then that's costing your economy loads. Now you look at all these teams breaking out. Mate, it's the fucking hybrid AWPer you want. What you want instead is you want to have at least two players who are hybrids in your team, and then you do it by committee. This guy likes to be aggressive on Mirage T-Site. Cool, he's that AWPer. This guy prefers to play B on Inferno. Because the other part that they don't think about, right, is if you're a really world-class AWPer, yes, you can play every map with it. But if you're just the good functional AWPer, you now also will end up getting put in certain spots on certain maps on CT that probably don't suit you, but it's where the AWPer plays. And so now your game's even worse. So I feel like, I mean, KJB is the ultimate example of this. Absolutely a competent AWPer, but if you're going to put him as a primary AWPer on every map on both T and CT side, he's going to be mad limited, and your team will never go further than sort of his level can get to. So yeah, JDM, I understand why they cut him. I also get why they didn't, because if they were stuck in that paradigm, it's the same thing everyone kept saying about Skadoodle for 3 years. But if you cut him, who can you get as good? Now, I would always say, I'm not getting an AWPer, and they'd be like, but it must be an AWPer. So do we have to get Ricky from Renegade? It's like, well, you've created the problem. I don't know why you're giving this mad solution, you know? So I think what we've seen is, like, Liquid's a great example. They've got a bunch of players that can play as a hybrid. I don't really buy that necessarily Nitro will continue on with it. NAF certainly turned into a good player in that sense. And I also think, anyone who's thinking of the NAF story and going, I always said he was good 3 years ago, you've missed the point. The reason why he's this good is because he didn't get the breaks, because he wasn't the guy who got picked up by Cloud9, because he did get kicked from teams, because when other people moved on, they left him behind and said, I'm not sure about him. As a result, he's done the fucking Kenny S career cycle where you go to the other teams and you become so good, they have to bring you back to the original teams because you've fucking grinded it out and you've sort of built yourself up to what you could be through all the adversity.
It was interesting, actually. I don't want to spoil any of it, but obviously we filmed a documentary series that were airing on TBS during the major, and we followed Renegades. They were one of the team, and like, I think Naf knew he was out the door. Like, you guys will obviously get to see it, but I watched some of the, you know, rushes and some of the clips from it and stuff because I had to record some voiceover, and me and the directors and the producers were like looking at it. And there's like interviews where he's like going, I'm just playing my best man. Like, you know, and it was all me, like not very warm or sort of, generous to his teammates. And like on top of that as well, their fucking coach was absolutely losing his fucking mind, screaming everyone. It's going to be straight fire if people want to watch it. But yeah, I definitely got the impression that Naf knew he was already out the fucking door. And like he knew he was just playing for a better spot on a better team. And then to turn up and do this, like, tournament one, day one. And I got to say as well, I do feel fucking sorry for JDM because he was meant to get a swan song at Katowice. But ESL have just announced that they're going to not enforce the roster rules and that everyone's going to play with the rosters that they have now, kind of like a hard reset after Rostermania. So JDM had already done a tweet longer saying, yep, Katowice will be my last tournament with Team Liquid. I hope to win it. We probably will now. Well, there's no way after winning Summit that fucking JDM gets to come back. So just fucking sad story for him. But yeah, really impressed with his Team Liquid. I'll ask you the question because you've done videos about this before and you said right at the start of the show, this bet is back on. Right, this is one tournament, so I know you don't want to knee jerk it and jump the gun.
Okay.
Can Liquid fucking be an international team?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask, do I want to go double or nothing?
Nah. I'm not. Well, I'll come up with a much better bet. Probably he's ahead of the major or something.
Right, here's the big problem I see with this team is, like, I still don't think the in-game leader thing is entirely sorted. Steel does just look like he just is a person alive in the server while the others are all doing shit. So I think that's far from resolved. I do think the talent in the team is fucking bonkers. This has to be one of the best lineups I've ever seen from NA. So the thing is, this is one of those teams where, like, just the sheer amount of, like, star potential they have is so good that maybe it doesn't even have to be, like, doesn't have to have a set structure, doesn't have to have one player who always does this and then the other one does that. Maybe they can just do it by committee. So I kind of feel like they could be a very good team, actually. I have to say, this team actually is quite similar to the Cloud9 team. I think I see them both in a similar kind of way. They've got so much talent all over the place. And what's amazing is at the moment, it's not just one player carrying. It tends to be pretty evenly distributed. Everyone does a bit of everything. Plus having all that talent and having so many, like, sort of well-rounded players means you can do different things in games, which actually gives you strengths on different maps. I could see them being as good as Cloud9, put it that way.
Yeah, well, that leads on to the next question then. Is 2018, is it really happening? Is this the year of NACS? Is it going to become a dominant region? Because we've got a major winner, right? We've got, obviously, Liquid now getting into the mix. Sure, I think FaZe, obviously, you would look to say, like, they have got to be the guys that eventually sort of establish themselves as the number one team in the world. It would be a travesty if they didn't. SK Gaming in the mix, but obviously we're disappointing at the Summit, which we'll talk about in a moment. Already talked about how Danish CS seems to have really sold itself short in the Rostermania and nobody particularly strengthened. So actually, I think there's a solid argument ahead of time to say NA could be the dominant force in World Counter-Strike, which is hilarious.
Yes.
Because 2018 is where the time when all these orgs are going, there's no point in being in CS. Trust me, if Cloud9 and Liquid keep winning tournaments like this, there's going to be so much interest and sponsorship money coming in, you're going to miss the trick for not supporting this game. But anyway, that's a side issue.
Like, here's the thing. It won't be the dominant area, as in, like, neither of these teams is going to be the number one team and win most of the tournaments and, you know, be in every final. Like, no. But I do think that what they could do is what Danish CS did in 2017, where it's like, okay, after, obviously, after, like, 3 months, Astralis wasn't number one anymore. But No other country could say, we've got more players than more teams than you in the top eight or whatever. No, they had Astralis and they had North pretty much the whole year in the top six, top eight. So by default, they were the best CS country. Now, that is absolute. If you look at the landscape right now, that is entirely plausible for NA. Because actually, like I said, I see both. What I like about the two teams is I don't think one is clearly better than the other. So this could be the first time ever. I've never seen this in Counter-Strike where I think you could actually have, like, you know, for a whole year, like the fourth and fifth best teams in the world could both be from NA. Therefore, they would have the most teams in the top five.
And constantly vying for the number one spot in the region, yeah.
And so as a result, yeah, by default, I think they could be the best country, which is that is inconceivable to have thought at any point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. I made that point on Twitter. I said, you know, I said NA could have assembled a tournament winning team in 2018. Never in your wildest dreams would you have ever thought to. But you can't factor in the likes of, you know, Twists coming through, Elige being fucking god tier, the resurgence of Automatic, Taric being one of the best fragging in-game leaders in world Counter-Strike. Like, it's absolutely mind-blowing, the level of development. And I think it does justify a little bit of what we talked about. Like, some of that old guard had to fucking make way to let these guys step up. And it finally happened, and you're reaping the dividends now in 2018 of that. So Cloud9 for me here, like, they're going to be disappointed they didn't win the tournament. But I'll tell you what, that fucking 2-0 over SK Gaming, Cloud9 are no fucking joke in 2018. Believe it. The people have said to me the major was a fluke win. Now, I think there's a difference between having like a miracle run, an incredible performance, maybe getting a few breaks at crucial moments and you know, all of that, and it being a fluke. I don't think it's a fluke. This team has been consistently improving, has got an amazing like amount of talent in depth on the roster. We all called them as dark horses on this podcast. I mean, obviously your dark horse means you don't believe they're going to go on and do it, but you know they've got that potential. And now getting like such a comfortable, comprehensive win over SK Gaming. I mean, I think it's the first 2-0 they've had in fucking ages, by the way. I think it's the first time they've been 2-0'd by any opponent in a long, long time. And more importantly, Cloud9 beat them on fucking Overpass, which is, you know, if you expect them to beat them on Inferno, but beating SK Gaming on Overpass, that's like a Herculean fucking labor these days. Cloud9 did it easily, 16-9 on both maps. So I think, sure, they lose the final to Team Liquid. They were a little bit flat. The final was, a great watch, but I think Team Liquid sort of made the final with how good they were more than anything else. But they are showing that they are definitely, for me right now, on current form, a top three team in the world.
I can't really argue with that. I mean, like, especially because, as you say, they beat SK on Overpass. Well, they just came off beating FaZe on Overpass, also by pretty good numbers. So I think the most exciting thing about Cloud9 is this weird shift they've taken. And it doesn't sound, again, from the interview I did with Automatic, like a lot of this was premeditated and things they had planned out, you know. But this weird shift they've had, where they already were really good on Mirage, right? That was already a map they had. But they kept trying to fuck around with Train before. They always thought Train was their best map with it, you know, and you actually saw that was one of the ones that let them down a bit. Well, now they've got Overpass, and obviously everyone saw the major Inferno. If you can play Mirage, Overpass, Inferno, you're definitely getting two of those three all day long. So that's a fantastic map pool, along with having a good team. So I think they're primed right now to be in great position. I mean, funnily enough, Team Liquid themselves, with some of their map pool here, showed themselves to have a little bit weird angle. They've got Cobble and Train apparently. So I think this is the exciting thing. These teams are coming at it from different angles as well.
Yeah, exactly. No overlap in that map pool. And you know, I couldn't agree more. I think it's an exciting time. I want to ask you some questions about SK Gaming, though.
Okay.
I know it's a bit too soon because it's the first tournament after the major. I saw a lot of people. You know how it is when SK Gaming lose. Everyone's dropping the Omega lulls and everyone loves it because everyone hates greatness for some reason inherently. Then if, like, Fallen was to come out and say, like, oh, I don't know, we're all going to retire, everyone would literally be crying in the streets, you know. So it's like, That's just sports in a nutshell, I guess. But, you know, they did talk about how they were a much better team with Bolts and that they were fucking, hyping up that they'd been practicing and that, you know, the Phelps thing was always an anomaly. Like, the major, it was always going to be a Hail Mary. This was the first tournament we saw them with this supposed practice and Bolts slotted into the lineup. And honestly, they didn't look great. They looked very good, but not great. Not SK Gaming. I was expecting SK Gaming to make a statement of intent here and certainly make it to the final. But they, as I said, they lost 2-0 at Cloud9. It's the first time they'd lost 2-0 since 2016. And then, if I remember rightly, they got 2-0'd again by Liquid, right? Yeah. So you've gone 0-4 against NA teams playing maps that you're supposed to be dominating. So I ask you the question, is this hype about the Bolts lineup and how SK Gaming think it's going to make them the best version of themselves? Is that actually a misstep, or is it just a little bit too soon to judge?
I definitely wouldn't jump to like a drastic conclusion of this event, but that's also because my entire position when SK won the 3 out of 4 events was don't go too drastic on the idea they are some unbeatable team who will now clearly dominate and be number one in World Counter-Strike. Like that's, I mean, remember everyone in the entire scene, including analysts and people who are supposed to be my mates, all called me a fucking idiot and said we had to crown SK Gaming. Clearly they are the best. I noticed those little rats are all under rocks right now off in Copenhagen or wherever the fuck they are right now. Quiet as a mouse when people are shitting the bed that they think are legends, right? It's weird that. Here's the thing about me, guys. I actually say things whether the team wins or loses. I give you my actual opinion. And by the way, to this day, people still claim I never call out Nico or Device. Like, you just don't read my Twitter feed then, do you? I do it all the time whenever these guys shit the bed. So I have to say, I wouldn't go as far as to say this is going to make them drop off. Like, I'd still go ahead right now and say, for me, SK and FaZe are still going to be the top teams until I see some more conclusive results to suggest otherwise. They're both just so good in their own ways. I do think it's worth thinking about that when SK had all those amazing results, think about how many close games they won. They had close games against Astralis with a stand-in. They had close games sometimes against FaZe, the team that supposedly they own and, you know, have permanent rental space inside their fucking heads. They had all sorts of three-map series, you know. It's not as though this was a team that was just wrecking everyone and they were so dominant that, yeah, obviously, you know, they're never going to lose a tournament. No, I will say losing to these NA teams, yeah, that's kind of a bit of a shock. But then again, we just spent the last half an hour explaining that this is a different era of NA Counter-Strike. This isn't like losing to the Cloud9 that had, like, all the Team Liquid that had JDM and Stanislaw, or losing a map to a Cloud9 that has fucking Shroud and Nothing and Skadoodle at the same time. No, these are really good teams right now. So it's definitely no disrespect to lose to these teams. Yeah, you should beat them. I expect them to be better. But, and then you have to add in, this is the one factor that, it doesn't sour it, but definitely reduces my hype about all the results at this tournament. It's a fun tournament in someone's house. This is one of the reasons why I made this point in the past on Twitter many times, right? There's a part of me that wishes that every single tournament just took place in a studio environment with no fans, just playing. So it was the highest level Counter-Strike. And then it was just beamed to the 99.999% of people who watched the game. And you could control every aspect. And we never had delays. It was always the same PC. But the one reason why I would actually never sign up for that is because I've seen that playing in major playoffs breaks people. It breaks fucking players. It makes people who are having a hot tournament season suddenly show themselves to be mortal. It also does the opposite. It brings people out of their shell who sometimes don't turn up in the normal games but are fucking legends at majors. So I would never trade that. And unfortunately, that factor, more than any other tournament with this level of teams, was non-existent here because it was just in a house and it was for fun and it was the first tournament and Star Series is in a week. So you'll never see a tournament with this much prize money and these many teams that has less of sort of a pressure factor, quite frankly. So I do feel like to some degree, like the Team Liquid result especially has to be the most sort of called into question because this was almost like winning the scrim session.
Well, yeah, and I agree with that for sure. I think you can't read too much into the tournament because of the format. One thing that is interesting is we talk a lot about the SK Gaming FaZe rivalry and how, you know, that should be Team 1 and 2 vying for supremacy. There's actually an interesting rivalry fucking building up with Cloud9 because obviously Cloud9 beat SK Gaming at the major. They followed that up. There was a WESG game immediately after it where Cloud9 16-2'd SK Gaming and everyone was, of course, trotting out the excuses of, you know, online CS, and it's the first game after the major, and people aren't prepared, and, you know, as if anyone's trying not to win.
You know what? It was Brazilian fans who invented, I think it was them who invented that phrase, cry is free. You motherfuckers would know. If that shit had any sort of currency, you wouldn't be able to afford it like Bitcoin.
And then they followed it up with SK Gaming Bounce Back, and they got a 2-1 victory in a series in the WESG North American region qualifiers as well. And then now at the summit, obviously Cloud9 get that 2-0, and they're playing right now at the opening game in the ESL Pro League, and it's even Stevens at the time of observing that. So I actually think that could go on to be one of the great fucking rivalries. If you think about it, there's already a great spicy bit of history there with Cloud9 having beat them at the ESL Pro Series Finals in Brazil. So I'm actually enjoying this rivalry, like how much they're playing against each other, the contrasting styles, the plethora of talent. I think it's great. I think it's good for the scene. One final thing about CS Summit, because I'm not going to break down the tournament too much. I guess it's a RIP for Vegas Squadron. The Vegas Squadron hype train has finally been derailed, Duncan. It's all done. It's like there is a difference between best of ones and best of threes all along.
Not only that, look at the teams they lost to, right? Okay, I'll give you this. The New North looks like it might be decent.
Shouldn't be losing to Torqued.
Got utterly shit on. And then, yes, to lose to Torqued, I don't care what... I know everyone loves those NA players, so they want to believe it's that they're really good. They're not. Like, I'm telling you right now, Torqued's not going to do anything special. Within the context of wherever they play, Premier or something, yeah, they might be good, but they're not in any sense like a team where Vega can go, we can hold our heads up high knowing that we got beaten by banned players and people who barely have the motivation to play Counter-Strike. No, this is an unacceptable loss. Now, here's the mad thing. In a world in which fans weren't such absolute shitlords, you'd have nothing but praise for Vega because you'd go, congrats, wow, you beat FaZe, great performance. So few teams can do that. Maybe you've shown us something about a style of play. But because everyone had to overblow it and count all their chickens before they hatched, I have to take a fucking little mallet and smash all those motherfucking eggs and let that shit run out the basket. I don't know anything more about this. And I've tried to pull that, yeah, stretch that analogy as far as I could go there.
It's fine. You're smashing eggs. It's great. But look, here's the thing. I'll say this about Torqued, right? Like, Steel can definitely hang at international level, both as an in-game leader, as a fragger. I don't give a fuck what you're thinking or what you're going to say. If he wasn't banned, he'd be straight fire. I know Swag didn't have a good tournament. I know that you fucking tweeted out so much. I still think he's one of the like biggest tragic losses to World Counter-Strike that ever happened. And certainly he could have been, he was a Stewie, yeah, 2K before Stewie 2K.
No, I mean, the real tragedy there has nothing to do with throwing. He could have thrown the games if he did just not accepted the skins.
Exactly.
Probably could have won a major by now and been defended by a load of cunts who apparently have no morality.
But on top of that, like, I thought Steel like showed that he's definitely like still a sick player. You know, keep in mind that obviously he's the in-game leader. He topped Fragged in the two series I think they played overall. If you add all the kills together, it's just like, again, it's just sad watching these guys. One thing I will say is these people who fucking said, "Oh, CS Summit, how dare you invite Torqued?" Do you not know how an invite tournament works? An invite tournament is we invite the teams we want to play at the tournament. It's not a fucking qualifier. It's not as if they had a qualifier and then someone had to drop out, you know, and fucking they passed over every other team in the qualifier. You can invite teams like who the fuck you want. Basically, teams that were assembling their roster together that had been invited at the last minute turned down the invite after saying we accept. So first of all, you're in a bind in that sense. But honestly, I would like to see Torqued and teams like Torqued, these more wild card teams, get invited to events, because we all know there's no way for a team with Steel and Swag and AZK in it to actually go to a Valve endorsed event. And because of that, a lot of fucking other mainstream events, if you like, are super apprehensive about having them compete in their tournaments because they're worried about whether or not Valve will deny them a major, which Valve are certainly not that petty. It's an unfounded fear, in my opinion. Guys. Yeah, so these guys should still be able to have a career outside of the majors. And certainly, I commend the Summit for inviting them here, even though they absolutely looked awful and you know, out of their depth by comparison to the other teams, which really puts Vegas Squadron's loss into a sharp focus. I'll say this as well. Cooster agreeing to play with these guys, like, there's always this footnote, isn't there? Like, if you agree to play with these guys, you are saying, I know I'm not going to play at a major. So it's crazy to think about the Cooster journey. If you remember him at the NA Minor when he was playing at Selfless, he was just banging everyone out. Best AWPer in NA. Should he replace Skadoodle? Should he go here? Should he go there? Goes to Liquid. All downhill. And now here you are playing for a talk lineup that can never compete in a major. I mean, it's one of the, again, it's another sad waste of talent.
Oh, absolutely. That's why, actually, that's the most ridiculous. I know Moses almost does it as a meme now to say he's still on board with that. But, like, the reason why, if I'm Moses, I can't be on board with Kuster. Because here's the thing. Kuster himself doesn't believe in Kuster. I mean, go watch my interview with FNS. He would actively just give up the AWP to Ricky and be like, you should do it now, even though everyone in the team was like, well, you're better, though. Nah, you're better. It's like, I can't abide by players who have no confidence in themselves. It's one of the reasons why, this might be a very subtle reason, as to why I became a massive supporter of Device. Because actually, for the first, like, 2 years of this guy's career, I absolutely trashed him constantly because I could tell he was a player who didn't have the confidence in himself, didn't believe in himself, had the talent, you'd show all these flashes of it, and you could literally set your watch by when he was going to choke in a fucking semi-final. But once I actually noticed that, yeah, even though he hadn't got 100% over it, he had a bit of fire in him and he understood that that was going on and now he was going to battle past it and he believed he could do it and he was going to look for something. Now I'm on board, right? Cool. Now let's see if we can develop this talent and potential and do it with it, etc. So I'm always like, if this is like fucking Dragon's Den and someone's like, oh, I've got a lot of skills and a good business plan, but I don't know if I could run it, get the fuck out, don't care. So yeah.
So that'll wrap up the summit talk. I don't think there's any other great sort of takeaway points there. I mean, you know, we'll watch the rest of it develop. So we're going to start wrapping up the podcast. Is one other thing I just wanted to bring to your attention. It is officially over. Obviously Sixer did get replaced by Hadji, an academy player, and Sixer is now in that academy team. So maybe he can learn a thing or two and get back to playing well. So,
mate, are you ready for this? Listen, don't even need to trash talk. Sixer won't even be the best player on Envious Academy.
No, definitely not. I think we'll monitor that situation.
I used to be good in 1.6. Better build a time machine then, cunt.
So there's that. And here's the other thing. While we're talking about the French scene, because I know this will bring a fucking tear to your eye.
Come on.
Obviously, existence going out of LDLC. We didn't talk about that neither. So I know you, like, put it this way. When people say, oh, all you ever do is praise Device, like, I know they're full of shit. All you ever do is praise Kenny S. I know they're full of shit. All you ever do is praise Nico. I know they're full of shit. I'm going to tell you to your face, your love affair with existence is fucking disgraceful. Get a fucking room, you two, mate. Because it's fucking, it's embarrassing at this point. You're out there, like, for someone who appreciates greatness, right? You're the guy who's always out there going, yeah, bloody hell, you got to love existence's tenacity when he tweets things out like, I will not quit till I win a major. He better build a fucking time machine, cunt.
Could well be.
Like, I just don't get it. So anyway, he's stepping down from LDLC after what has been sort of languishing in the middle, the middle of that pack, you know, in that tier two, tier three sort of, you know, they should be better than what they are.
Oh, he didn't step down. He was kicked.
Oh, was he actually kicked?
Apparently what happened is he actually, like, one of the reasons why I told you moves might be happening, he himself agreed, like, we can't just keep running the same lineup, you know, we've reached the end of that. So he wanted to make moves, potentially serious moves. And the rest of the team were like, actually, you're only in this team because LDLC wants you in here and we don't want you in here anymore. And you're way too harsh considering we're shit. And so you're out. And they literally decided to play with no in-game leader, basically.
That's a bit crazy. I mean, because, you know, I saw Maniac put out his twit longer and he was like saying he was actually, you know, in tears when he left, which I believe, actually. I don't think that's hyperbole. Like, Maniac's like a very emotive player and like one of the nicest dudes you'll ever meet. So he probably was upset. But yeah, you're right, actually. So my bad. He says, yeah, I'm the one who was kicked in a statement. I respect it. So interesting decision then, because for me, say what you will about existence, he's an awful player these days and really needs to coach. But he was the identity of the team. Like, who is going to take these disparate parts of Devil? Less said about that, the better. Maniac, who is, again, a player, you've got to admire his heart and his tenacity, but he hasn't been a fragger, a good player. You know.
Sadly, those aren't stats in Counter-Strike.
Exactly. He's got the intangibles, but none of the tangibles. Twanu, who was one of the most overhyped pieces of talent to come out of the Benelux scene I've ever seen. And Alex, some UK player who somehow fucking fluked his way out of playing with like more established names. It was actually probably the better player on the team. I mean, Devil's your firepower on this.
No, listen, mate. That's all you need to know. That's how far the UK scene's come. You know, I was making that comment the other day. People in Brazil and France should learn English so they can be on other teams. If you're in the UK, start learning fucking French, mate. It's your best chance. You know, there's not going to be a UK team, is it, you daft cunt? Don't be silly.
The Stiffmeister. I'm reliably informed that Astro is beans, whatever the fuck that means. So, but yeah, so I don't know. I just think now this LTLC, I think it's such like, the fact that he gets kicked from the team and Existence isn't even a coach, it's just not going to do anything now. Like, Existence is many things. A great leader is one of them. And without a leader, I just think that LDLC team's fucking done. I just think it's done.
It's a waste of time, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a lot of flaws. They were never going to do anything, but that was the one shining point they had, which is they had someone who was overqualified to be their in-game leader. And here's the saddest part. Remember what I just told you about why he was kicked? Because he actually was, even in that team, going like full general, like, we're going to do all these tactics. You've got to improve. Like, you've got to step your level up. And I mean, sadly, this is another reason why Existence is not at the top. Forget all the other aspects, which definitely are factors, like failed all the majors, had certain issues working with certain players, too demanding. But what, in reality, the number one reason he isn't a leader is the last one. It's too demanding. The modern day player, it's the same in most sports, actually. It's the same in the NBA right now. Famously, in the NBA, there aren't really many coaches left who are like the genius X's and O coaches. They don't exist. What happens instead is the coach is almost picked by the star player, and his job is just everything goes through the star player. If you've got that guy, and then the star player just does whatever the fuck he wants. And in a sport like basketball, that works. But what it's meant is the newest generation of star player are the most entitled, whiny little bitches you'll ever fucking see. Like, as players, they're amazing. If you get to know them as, like, people, you wouldn't believe these are, like, 27, 30-year-old men. They act like a 17-year-old rich kid. And sadly, a lot of Counter-Strike players are like that. Like, I actually think in some ways, Counter-Strike has gone back in time a bit, where no one respects tactics and leadership and these qualities. They think it's like all about like your fucking raw aim and your ability to frag and all that sort of garbage, where, yeah, that will always be a big factor. It'll never be all of it, though. And so all I've ever said about Existence is this. I don't know if he could actually be like the number one leader and his team could be number one again. There's a lot he'd still have to prove, and he definitely would have to crack that major curse, because he was the only contributing factor for a long time. Admittedly, they failed after him. But I will say this, if it's that tactics don't work and it's all about this force buy style, I wouldn't really say that for the last 2 years the French scene's shown him up without them. They've been fairly lackluster relative to their talent level. Bearing in mind, like, you know, remember the thing about the G2 lineup you always have to remember is it's the only lineup in French Counter-Strike history that had the two best players of all time from France in it. Still didn't win a motherfucking major.
Yeah, it's true. And one thing I will say is he definitely brings something to the coaching table, no doubt about it. Like, you see that statistic that came out where it was like, we're always talking about better statistics in CS because the ones we've got are pretty lackluster and garbage. Well, HLTV have got this stat now where you can see how long the opponent was flashed from the flash stats. And he was at the top with an average of 3.39 seconds from all flashes thrown, and that's across 222 maps, the largest sample size for most of the people on that list. I think there's like a couple who are like 260 and 240. Obviously he knows what the fuck he's doing, and I remember Very Games when he was on that. That's how they beat you. It was just like me and Henry always joke about it. You'd sit down to watch their demos, and it would just be fire, just constant like bombardment of fucking flashbangs and smokes, like. Just it used to be so irritating because that's how they played their offensive T sides. So anyway, yeah, I know there was something going on in the neurons. Go on, say it, Duncan.
Plus, I mean, fair play. They also did have the best pseudo hacker in Regnam just figuring out the fucking game, didn't they? So
Well, true. Regnam knew everything.
Congrats.
He was.
You know what's great, by the way? I'll give you an example of it. You'll love this because I know you love it when people come out in public and lie. Yeah. So Regnam came out. He replied to someone. I can't remember who it was.
I saw this. Yeah,
I think it was either like Lurpus or it was Vendetta. You know, someone in the scene and said something like, that is all false that you are spreading that all about you. Yeah, how about this, Regnam? Your own players told me it.
Yeah.
You like me now? Now, listen, I actually think you're a cool guy. You probably did a lot for
Captain. Yeah, Regnam sound.
Real, recognize real. Just don't try spinning propaganda when there's motherfuckers out there that'll call your name out.
Forgot about Dre. But yeah, so you're right. I mean, we'll talk about that on the next podcast, maybe. I think that's an interesting topic. Like, they were definitely a team that leveraged every advantage that they could get. And obviously, some people consider that to be cheating. Some people say it's gamesmanship. You should be doing it.
There is one more thing as well to say on the existence topic, which is that here's the bizarre thing. So inside of the French Benelux seat, yes, he's ruined his whole rep. No one wants to play with him. Even on the low level, no one wants to play with him. And obviously, unless something drastic happens, he's not getting the call up to G2. Mm. But I know to this day, international players who ask me, would existence ever join a top team like mine? Or would they ever play with another team? Or what, you know, his respect in the international scene is still good. Yeah. So if this guy just ever put any effort into learning English, which, by the way, doesn't actually have to, I'll go ahead and tell you that.
His English is fine as well. I've talked to Kevin.
That's what's mad. But his problem is he needs to learn it more, as in to get the confidence. Like, the best example ever is Kenny S. Kenny S spoke fuck all English, because remember, he started Counter-Strike when he was like 14 or something. And so, you know, I think he quit school even. I'm not sure, but I believe he's one of those players who did. So that guy had terrible English. You know the reason why he has good English now? He got a girlfriend who speaks fucking English. I know, I did the same principle myself. I once learned like how to count to like 30 in Korean, because this mega hot Korean chick was touching my dick every time I got an answer right.
Timestamp all of this. All right, let's wrap up the show, eh? Is that the motivator? Is that how you learn foreign languages?
I was like making connections like fucking Limitless or something. Like, touch more 29.
I don't remember that on the Rosetta Stone or the Linguaphone fucking tapes. Like, touch dick now.
Exactly. It works. I'm telling you. Puts you in sort of a trance like state. You connect to your fucking animus.
Yeah, not bad. Anyway, let's wrap it up. So we got $100 question coming in from Matasius. He said, you guys have mentioned that Neo and Taz should try to develop the Polish scene. Since the Swedish scene has been doing worse relatively to the past, should there have been somebody in the Swedish scene that stepped up and helped raise new talent? So I'll give my own observations about this just quickly. The bottom line was, you had Kingmakers in Sweden. You had Kingmakers. You had players who, going right the way back to the Lemon Dogs mixes, they said whether or not you were good. They vouched for you. It's like Donnie Brasco. You know, he's a friend of ours. You know, it had to be like that. That was the only way you could get in to a top-tier Swedish team in 1.6. And a little bit of that permeated through to CSGO. And it actually started with NIP, where people had question marks about Freiburg. And it was Fiflaren who knew Get Right and fucking Forrest and had to basically vouch for him to get him a trial. And, you know, I always get it mixed up. It wasn't Delpan, but there was some other player they were thinking about, some other Swedish player at the time. And Freiburg kind of got in on a recommendation.
Oh, it was Face.
Yeah, it was Face. That was it. Yeah. So, you know, and because, again, the guys knew him from 1.6, had played with him in previous lineups. That's how the Swedish game has always been played. And actually, we hit a bottleneck where it was like you had the old guys who couldn't hang anymore, but this new talent was only coming through occasionally on a personal recommendation were not getting in to these teams to develop their overall talent. And let's think about we've talked about it before on the show. If you look at all of the talent that came through Sweden, the next big thing that was going to happen, the Disco Doplins, you know, all of the Freddy fucking B, all of the Pits, the Paufs, you know, you fucking name it, right? None of those guys, when they got those recommendations, were given enough time to really flourish and do anything. And immediately, upon failure, went back to fucking obscurity, back to those lesser teams, and will probably never be tried out again. So for me, the issue is one of it's endemic to the Swedish scene. It's been there a long time. If you do not become buddy-buddy with the big names and prove to them you're good enough, you will never even get a sniff. And that's one of the great things about what's happening in NIP, because they're the Swedish team that are changing that culture right now. And if I guess to a lesser extent, Fnatic have done it as well. Golden coming through the academy side to be an in-game leader who's got to lead Legends. I think the changes are happening, to answer your question. I just think it's come a little bit too late for Swedish Counter-Strike to be relevant in 2018. They'll be there or thereabouts, NIP or Fnatic. They'll take some big scalps, maybe win some of the smaller tournaments, maybe some dream hacks on the side. But honestly, they're not going to factor into the top five, maybe even the top eight. world teams, you know? Like, there's going to be, with the emergence of NA, you know, I think Sweden's still going to struggle, honestly.
I think they're not in good shape. I mean, especially because now they've ended up with a really weird mix of players where, like, Fnatic has this, like, really solid fundamental base that looks good. But, you know, the ceiling for the team, like, you can't really see them winning tournaments, you know. They're just a really solid team. I could see them being, like, sixth best team in the world. Then NiP's got all this, like, talent. Like, they have a nice ceiling, but I can't see where the consistency is going to come from. They look like more like, you know, they're looking for one-hit wonders, basically, trying to just have, like, a hot tournament. Beyond that, there's nothing in Sweden. It's actually fucking depressing. Like, where is everyone? And part of it is, as in, we tied it back in again, it's that the Freibergs and the Fiflarens and the Exists don't leave and then go down to that level and raise things up. Now, I don't blame them in the early days. Yeah, there was no salary. It was a waste of time. Yeah. But you've now got to the point where, especially if you're the big name on this team, you can make a solid salary and you could still do some things in this game.
Yeah. So I hope that answers your question, Matasius. We're going to wrap up the show right now. So what we need to do is thank the people that make this podcast possible, our lovely patrons. Our $100 patrons are Detlef Insomniac. He is the king of the hill with the $200 donation. Thank you very much, brother. Dr. Skrilla and Mr. K Icon. I just realized, by the way, that's obviously a reference to us. I guess in your Dr. Skrilla.
I assumed because of KNG that I was Gay Icon.
No, I prefer to myself as a gay icon before, because okay. It's true. I'll show you some of the DMs I get, Duncan. Definitely, it would blow KNG's mind anyway. Chris Enwin, Jerky's Minion, and Mateus Pietakowski, and our $50 patrons, Woe Tough Guy, Richard Hennessy, Ben Akagi Assassin, Keith Miller, Nastradamus, COWO, Daniel Plamenov Yordanov, Carl Oscar Garcia Firm, Marcus Kyumpar, Saad Sawar, Funky Boy, and William Southern. So thanks to everybody who tuned in live. And then if you're watching the VOD, obviously, yeah, we cut the best bits out. Shut the fuck up. Thanks for watching the VOD. Thanks to Duncan. Thanks to me. Thanks to Sam. And we'll see you on the next episode of By the Numbers next week. Take care.